This is the Gospel of Mark, chapter 5, reading from verse. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, October 14, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is... matter of fact, this number may be wrong. I got the 605 number, so I'll skip that. Anyway, if anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up in the Gospel of Mark where we left off last week. This is the Gospel of Mark, chapter 5, reading from verses 21 through 43. And when Jesus passed over again by ship into the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet, and besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him, and thronged him. And a certain woman, which had an issue of blood 12 years, and had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing bettered, but rather grew worse. When she had heard of Jesus, came in and pressed behind and touched his garments. For she said, If I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. And Jesus immediately, knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned him about to the press and said, Who touched my clothes? And his disciples said unto him, Thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and thou sayest, Who toucheth me? And he looked round about to see her that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace, and be whole of thy plague. While he yet spoke, there came from the ruler of the synagogues the house a certain, which said, My daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the master any further? As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he saith unto the ruler of the synagogue, Be not afraid, only believe. And he suffered no man to follow him save Peter and James and John and the brother of James. And he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogues, and seeth the tumult, and them that wept and wailed greatly. And when he was come in, he saith unto them, Why make ye this ado and weep? The damsel is not dead, but sleepeth. And they laughed him to scorn. But when he had put them all out, he taketh the father and the mother of the damsel, and them that were with him, and entered in where the damsel was laying. And he took the damsel by the hand, and said unto her, Which is talitha kami, which is being interpreted, Damsel, I say unto thee, arise. And straightway the damsel arose and walked, for she was of age of 12 years, and they were astonished with a great astonishment. And he charged them straitly that no man should know it, and commanded that something should be given her to eat. That was the Gospel of Mark, chapter 5, verses 21 through 43. Okay, I guess I was overmodulating there or something, Jen? So you sent me a note. I don't know how to fix that. Hopefully things will get better. Right, anyway, we're going to take a look at NLA's plan tonight. I did put something together, but I was unable to upload it yet into the up to the website. Let me make sure I'm coming through. Am I coming through okay?
You're coming through okay now. I think that was on the broadcaster. It was very staticky.
Yeah, it did sound bad. I don't know how to fix that, so hopefully we're not going to have that problem anymore. But I'm okay right at the moment?
Yep, you're okay now.
Okay. All right. Anyway, as I was saying, we're going to be looking at NLA's plan tonight, and it's kind of a twofold plan. A lot of people don't know the second part of our plan, but we're going to start picking up on that hopefully next month. As a matter of fact, for sure by next month. We might even start it earlier, you know, at the end of this month, talking about the committee man and taking control of the political process, because we're coming into an election year for committee men. Committee men get elected on even years. And we want to try to get as many committee men into the plan, you know, into the involved, you know, become a lot of our members to become committee men and get involved, and take back the political process also. Okay, but again, I'm unable to upload anything yet. We'll get it up there. I think we're working on is actually a PowerPoint on this, but let me read through this tonight. If I can find it. James chapter 1, verse 25. But whosoever looketh into the perfect law of liberty, and continueth therein, he being not of a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deeds. Everything we have been taught the past 60 years is fake, just like the news. We have fiat money, fake money, debt. Whereas Article 1, Section 10, the Constitution states that no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt. We have fake rights, civil rights. The government will tell us that we have civil rights given by them. Whereas we, the people, declared in the Declaration of Independence that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that they, the people, are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, rights that come from God, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We have fake government. Government will tell us we are a democracy, which is actually mob rule. Whereas Article 4, Section 4, we the people declared, the United States shall guarantee to every state of this union a republican form of government, a government of laws under a constitution, under common law. We have fake laws. The government will tell us that we are to obey the statutes, codes, and regulations, which is equity law, which was written for bureaucrats, elected individuals, appointed people, government agencies, and not the people. The people are under common law, under Article 3, Section 2. We have fake courts, civil courts, whereas Article 3, Section 2, again, the Constitution states that the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law, common law, and equity. And again, equity governs government agencies. They are the ones under statutes and regulations and codes, not we the people. We have fake juries, juries that are controlled by statutes, the juries that are not free and independent. We have fake political parties, which is controlled by party bosses, not the people. We have fake elections, whereas they count the votes in secret, and they will also count votes from dead people and illegals. We have a fake heritage. They will tell us that we are not a Christian nation, whereas America was framed after the nation of Israel and the teachings of Christ. To prove this, just take a look at Jefferson and Franklin's proposed U.S. seals. Franklin proposed a picture of the nation of Israel being delivered with Moses by the parting of the Red Sea. Jefferson had a picture of a pillar of fire protecting Israel from Egypt. We read in the Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, rights from God, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Our preamble of the Constitution, we state that we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. And therefore, we do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. So government's job is to secure the blessings of liberty. Blessings come from God. Under Amendment 1, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or forbidding its free exercise. Treason. Bankers, the American Bar Association, federal judiciary, and Congress all conspired to rob we the people of our courts of law. In 1865, by the 13th Amendment, just disappeared that prevented bar attorneys from holding office. And in 1868, the 14th Amendment, which stated that we have civil rights and that we are under the jurisdiction of the United States, whereas we the people have unalienable rights and under the jurisdiction of common law. In 1871, through the Organic Act, they created a foreign state, within a city, creating municipal law, the law of the city. And in 1878, 75 lawyers established the American Bar Association that teaches that common law was abrogated. In 1913, the 16th Amendment, which was unratified, stole the people's sovereignty. The Federal Reserve was created and took control of the U.S. Treasury. And the 17th Amendment, also unratified, stole states' sovereignty. In 1934, the Rules Enabling Act enabled the United States Supreme Court to write court rules. And in 1938, the court rules took control of our courts. The law of the land was abolished by the federal judiciary under Rule 2, and civil law was initiated in America. In 1944, the federal courts surrendered to the central banking system. In 1947, the CIA and NSA created a national police state and surveillance grid. In 1948, the United Nations, under the New World Order, established their headquarters in New York City. In 1950, the Rees Committee reported a communist plot by the National Lawyers Guild. And that report, half of that report, has disappeared, unavailable. In 2001, Homeland Security Police State Surveillance Grid reached its maturity. And in 2013, John Kerry signed the United Nations Arm Treaty, agreeing for the disarming of the American people. Unexpectedly, in 2017, Donald Trump became president and foiled the coup and begins dismantling the deep state. Today, outcome-based social education is still in full force in our schools, destroying our American youth. And according to the Washingtonian, there are 80,000 lawyers working in Washington, D.C., unwittingly and covertly spreading their venomous socialist agenda. These American Bar Association subverts have flooded our courts and polluted our Constitution with about 140 years of repugnant acts, statutes, and rules. All of the aforesaid destructive acts, along with many more, were possible because the federal government that centralized our education has removed civics, constitutional studies, and true American history from our curriculum and replaced it with an outcome-based socialist education. Hosea chapter 4, verse 6, God said, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will also reject thee, that thou shalt be no priest to me, seeing that thou hast forgotten the law of thy God. I will also forget thy children." The only solution. 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 14, God said, "If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray, and seek my face, and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, and I will forgive their sins, and will heal their land." In order for we the people to have government by consent, we must take back control both of our judicial and political process. Our founding fathers did not leave us without remedy. National Liberty Alliance is assembling and educating thousands of people across America who are poised in all 50 states and simply awaiting critical mass as we continue to assemble. Time is short, and our success will require the following commitment of your support and time. As the founders of America's Freedom Formula, Thomas Jefferson, said, "If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. And an enlightening citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. Educate and inform the whole mass of the people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty." In Proverbs chapter 6, verses 6 through 9, God said, "Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her way and be wise, which have no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer, and gathereth her food in the harvest. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep?" It is time for the people to arise out of our sleep, to learn and execute the following plan that will save America. First, we must take back our courts. This requires a basic understanding of the law. The law. As per Black's Law Dictionary, law derives from precedence, legislation, or custom under three categories. Number one, common law, which is subject to nature's God. Two, equity, is subject to a constitution established by the people. And three, civil law, is subject to the state. And any law subject to a constitution written by the state is still civil law and not equity. Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution states, "The judicial power shall extend to all cases in common law and equity arising under the Constitution and the laws of the United States." Civil law. Civil law, Roman law, and Roman civil law are convertible phrases, meaning the same system of jurisprudence. That rule of action which every particular nation, commonwealth, or city has established, particularly for itself, more properly called municipal law, to distinguish it from the law of nature and from international law. Today, outcome-based social education is in full force in our school, destroying our American youth. And according to the Washingtonian, there are 80,000 lawyers working in Washington, D.C., unwittingly and covertly spreading the venomous socialist agenda. These ABA subverts have flooded our courts and polluted our Constitution with more than 140 years of repugnant acts, statutes, and rules. All of these destructive acts were possible because the federal government that centralized our education has removed civics and constitutional studies and true American history from our curriculum and replaced it with an outcome-based socialist education. Common law, also known as natural law, eludes definition. Not statutes, not built upon precedents, not a collection of trial court rulings. Common law is written into the hearts and minds of men, being naturally common unto all. God said in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 16, This is the covenant that I will make with them after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my laws into their hearts, and in their minds will I write them. And in Romans chapter 2, verses 14 through 15, we read, For when the Gentiles, which have not the law, do by nature the things contained in the law, these having not the law are a law unto themselves, which show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, and their thoughts the meanwhile accusing or else excusing one another. The Declaration of Independence. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitles them, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Common law is the law of nature and of nature's God that rests upon two self-evident truths called maxims. Number one, for every injury there must be a remedy. And in order for there to be a crime, number two, there must be an injured party, without which no court may proceed. Maxims are brief, self-evident truths that control our law courts. Maxims provide discernment in the writing in our founding documents. Maxims are advisor to our legislatures. Every consideration of mankind seeks what's fair and best via maxims. Courts and public leaders that do not honor or consider maxims are not just. Our courts were established to enforce common law principles. The word justice is synonymous with virtue. Virtue is a biblical principle that derives from Jesus Christ alone. Maxims are the laws that never changes. No right-thinking person can disagree with a maxim. Every court is bound by the common law rules called maxims. Maxims put an absolute limit on those who rule, and maxims test those who judge. Equity. Equity is legislative law adopted by proper authority. Equity, which is positive law, is a body of jurisprudence or field of jurisdiction, differing in its origin, theory, and methods from the common law. Equity is called positive law, which is actually and specifically enacted or adopted by a proper authority, we the people, for the government of an organized juridical society. A law, in the sense in which that term is employed in American jurisprudence, is enforced by a sovereign political authority, being Congress, empowered and governed by Article 1, Section 8. It is thus distinguished not only from all rules which, like the principles of morality and so-called laws of honor and of fashion, from all rules enforced by a determinate authority, that is the Constitution, which is politically subordinate to the people, in order to emphasize the fact that the laws, in the strict sense of the term, are thus authoritatively imposed. They are described as positive law. Jurisprudence, the philosophy of law or science which treats the principles of positive law and legal relations. Proper authority stems from the nature's God, to the people, to the Constitution, to legislators, and then applied by judges upon the government, the three branches of government, deriving codes, statutes, and regulations to control the agencies of government. The Declaration of Independence. Governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government, we the people. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18. The Congress shall have power to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution and foregoing 17 powers, that all other powers vested by the Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. Equity governs our government. Civil law derives from Babylon. Babylonian law became Roman Empire's law, then the Code of Justinian, and the Roman Catholic Church law, and today, civil law. Civil law, Roman law, and Roman civil law are convertible phrases, meaning the same system of jurisprudence, that rule of action which every particular nation, commonwealth, or city has established peculiarly for itself, more properly called municipal law, which is tyrannical rule, to distinguish it from the laws of nature. Civil law finds its beginning in Babylon, placing the accused under the will of an earthly king who believes he has divine right to rule over the people of his kingdom. Usually the king's court is ruthlessly presided over by a priest or a judge who will execute the will of the king over his subjects without mercy. Babylonian civil or criminal courts were inquisitional, where the judge is both prosecutor and jury. Babylonian law morphed into Roman Empire's law, and Roman Empire's law morphed into the Code of Justinian, used by the Roman pontiffs to ruthlessly rule the Western world for 1260 years through the Roman Catholic Church. Roman civil law waged war against the common law in England until King John was chained down by the Magna Carta in 1215. Today, the common law of England is all but lost. In America, civil law has been nibbling away at the common law of the United States since 1789 and was all but lost to the tyrannical judiciary by the American Bar Association via the Rules Enabling Act of 1934. But today, the American people are waking up to the evils of the New World Order and its deep state, and are rediscovering their heritage and the natural law courts that were stolen and concealed by the United States Supreme Court in the mid-20th century, enabled by the U.S. Congress and Senate. The Rules Enabling Act of 1934 robbed our American heritage. Our heritage is our law. We are a republic, a people of the law. Germany's 1933 Enabling Act allowed the Nazi government to issue laws without the consent of Germany's parliament, laying the foundation for the complete Nazification of German society. The law was passed on March 24, 1933, and its full name was the Law to Remedy the Distress of the People and the Third Reich. Likewise, in 1934, the United States Congress passed the Rules Enabling Act, and according to the Federal Judiciary Center in 1938, pursuant to its authority under the said act, the Supreme Court enacted uniform rules of procedure for the federal courts. Among the changes wrought by the rules were the elimination of the federal court's separate jurisdiction over suits in equity. Under the new rules, suits in equity and suits in common law were grouped together under the term civil action, thereby subjecting common law to the will of the state's civil law. The 1938 coup, the United States Supreme Court and the federal judiciary claimed rules are law, thereby abrogating law and equity, placing God's natural law under their jurisdiction, the United States Constitution under their jurisdiction, all state constitutions under their jurisdiction, and we the people under their jurisdiction. This action was the very definition of a coup. It places the people under the will of cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men who have subverted the power of the people to usurp for themselves the reins of government. Their courts are inquisitional and are presided over by deceitful judges who will execute the will of these tyrants over the people without mercy. These law codes established to enslave their subjects find its roots in Babylon. If we don't eradicate this evil, America will be lost forever. Second, we must take back our political process. This requires an understanding of the political process. They robbed our political process using designating titles and the election law. The committeeman is the elected consentor. Members of the county committee, which is another title, also known as the town committeeman, are not elected at all, but appointed by a party boss. Under member of the county committee, we read in election law, subsection 6108, members of the county committee from a town shall be nominated at a primary election. Whereas under subsection 6-118 of the election law, it says the nomination of candidates for election to a party position to be elected at a primary election shall be by designating petition. And this is the law that they have expunged. It's still in the books. We can still execute it, but they have hidden it from the committees and from the committeemen, and a lot of people think that they are elected committeemen when, in fact, they are not. The title of member of the county committee, empowered by party rules and answers to the party bosses, where the committeeman, who is the elected consenter, is empowered by the law and answers only to the people. Members of the county committee is an advisory committee and meets in towns. Committeemen votes for every candidate, meets in the county seat, no proxy votes allowed. Members of the county committee can be removed from the seat by the party bosses for not doing the will of the party bosses, whereas committeemen can be removed from office by the people for not doing the will of the people. Members of the county committee, it's the great facade and conduit of evil that train candidates to be corrupt from the start. If they are not corruptible, they rarely get the party nod. Whereas committeemen, we need to jumpstart the law to take back the republic by bringing back the elected committeemen. The political fraud. Members of the county committee are not elected. They are controlled by party bosses. The people have no consenters. We have been robbed. The New York State Court, Supreme Court ruling, Francisco versus Borden, said, county committee had duly authorized the creation of such a town party committee or had conferred rulemaking powers upon it. The creation of a town party committee, its powers, authorities, and procedures are solely the province of a county committee. In the case Bell versus Kerwin, we read, the executive committeemen have no vested constitutional or statutory right to office. Their claim to serve as members of the executive committee must rest upon the rules of the party, since the executive committee, in common with all standing committees, was created by and existed pursuant to the rules of the party. The creation, selection, and grouping of committeemen from the town or city legislative districts, whether they are county committeemen or city or town committeemen, is a matter solely within the power and province of the county committee. DeCarmella versus Connery. Town political committee can be formed only upon the authorization of the county committee in which the town is located. It would follow that the rules and regulations governing the procedure of the town committee should come from the county committee. Barman versus Fusco. It is not disputed that the executive committee exists by virtue of the rules of the county committee and is not a creation of the election law. The purpose and power of the elected committeemen. Election law, subsection 6-118, states, the nomination of a candidate for election to a party position to be elected at a primary election shall be by designating petition. So only the elected committeemen at the primary election are actually elected. To date, we have not found anyone anywhere in the United States that is an elected committeeman. All committeemen that we have found so far have been appointed by the party bosses and therefore have not been elected and truly have no say, and they're just an advisory committee. But the power of the elected committee is that the committeemen are the people's way of having government by consent. This is where we consent to government. Committeemen are the guardians of our liberty. Committeemen interview candidates for the primary ballot. Committeemen can require candidates to take a constitutional course. Committeemen can prevent unconstitutional legislation. Committeemen can choose candidates that are statesmen. Committeemen can recall all disobedient politicians. Committeemen can prevent the ABA members from getting on the ballot. Committeemen preside over the election. And the committeemen can require and witness the hand counting of the votes. Only the people can restore the law. The people will either stand or submit. Now is the hour of decision. Join National Liberty Alliance's effort to take back our republic. John Adams said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and a religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." And that liberty once lost is lost forever. Edmund Burke said, "The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing." Patrick Henry said, "Now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their country." Declaration of Independence. Whenever any form of government becomes destructive to our rights, it is the right of the people to alter government and institute new servants. James Madison. The people have an indubitable, inalienable, and indefeasible right to reform or change their government whenever it be found adverse or inadequate to the purposes of its institution. Thomas Jefferson, when injustice becomes law, resistance becomes the duty. Join we the people at National Liberty Alliance now. Learn how to take back our republic. It's your duty. We the people are primed to take back our government. We the people have been building a case, and the time of decision has come. In 2002, we the people hosted the Truth in Taxation hearing and invited our servant government to come in Washington, D.C., which was broadcasted over C-SPAN, where we concluded that our courts of law are closed. The government did not respond. In 2004, we the people again hosted a conference to restore constitutional order and invited our servant government to come, and again was broadcast over C-SPAN, but the government failed to respond. In 2008, the U.S. Supreme Court denied answering a question from the case that had started earlier back in 2001, working its way up to the Supreme Court, with the question concerning the right of redress of grievances. The government denied answering. In 2009, we the people elected delegates for the Third Continental Congress from 48 states, which met in St. Charles, Illinois, and produced the Articles of Freedom. You can find a copy at nationallibertyalliance.org. In 2010, the delegates served the Articles of Freedom to all state representatives and also to all our federal government representatives. In 2015, we the people formed the Common Law Grand Jury and served a writ quo warranto and many writ mandamuses. In 2016, we the people, through the Common Law Grand Jury, filed an extraordinary action in the Northern District of New York Federal District Court. We filed over 100 documents and over 100 indictments and was met with silence. In 2017, President Trump started draining the swamp, dismantling the deep state. August 17, 2019, the Common Law Grand Jury filed a declaration of restoration of the law of the land and demanded for the resignation of those who are of a mind to resist or suffer an indictment for fraud on the court, conspiracy, felonies, and or treason. We the people, via the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, also known as the Sureties of Peace, hereinafter the people, are an assembly of more than 7,800 sovereign people from every state, being both the tribunal of this extraordinary action and the authors of the law under the authority of natural law by right of the covenants of 1776, 1789, and 1791, with our Creator under His natural law at large. On September 3rd, 2019, we filed notices of acts of treason by the United States Supreme Court and Congress for merging together equity with law under civil actions. On September 9th, 2019, we the people filed a second indictment against Judge Kahn for treason for trying to shut down our court of record. On September 16th, 2019, we filed again notices of acts of treason against the United States Supreme Court for creating fake law and fake courts. On September 25th, 2019, we again recorded and notified the United States Supreme Court of acts of treason for misprision of treason. On September 30th, 2019, we the people again filed against the United States Supreme Court and both houses of Congress a notice of treason for trying to turn our republic into a democracy. On October 7th, 2019, we the people have a right of the people to judge and serve notice to the United States Supreme Court and both houses of Congress. On October 14th, 2019, we started joining cases from all over the nation for cause, for the denial of due process, for moving these people into jurisdictions unknown. This is a call to action. We need four people or more in each county to run for committeeman in order to take back the political process. So a total of 15,000 people. We need four people in each county to become jury administrators, which is a paid career position, for again a total of another 15,000 people. We need about 30,000 people to take back control of our government. As Benjamin Franklin said, we don't have government by majority, but we have government by the majority that participates. Go to National Liberty Alliance to join us to take back our republic. Come to our Monday night open forums. Take our free civics course. Learn how we got here and understand the enemy. Take our government by consent course. Learn about your heritage. If you are stuck in one of these abusive courts, you can join your case to the grand jury's action. Thomas Jefferson said, "Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. An enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens." National Liberty Alliance is providing that sufficient and suitable education. Go to nationallibertyalliance.org. Okay, again, I apologize for starting so late this evening. I dozed off and just ran late, so apologize for that. Jan, do we have any announcements to be made tonight? Jan, can you hear me? Let me make sure that I'm coming through. I guess I am coming through. Maybe you're muted, Jan?
Yeah. Yes. Can you hear me, John?
Yep. You didn't fall asleep, too, did you?
No, I hit the wrong button. It dumped me out instead of muting me.
Okay.
Yes, we have some announcements tonight, and then we have a bunch of questions as well.
Okay.
First, I put an article in or a notice in the newsletter last week. I want to repeat it and add some information to it. We have a great opportunity here to have a free display table at the Edward G. Griffiths, Red Pill Expo in Mesquite, Nevada. that runs on November 8th and 9th. Now, all we need to do is purchase 6 general admission tickets or 4 VIP tickets, and we get a free table. I think the display tables cost around $500 if you had to buy one. Now, you can check the list of the speakers and their schedule and logistics and where it's held and all at redpillexpo.org. No spaces in it. Now, Dan Scadams has graciously offered to be one of the attendees, and so we need either five more if we go general admission. And he would help man the table, too. Now, the early
and that's in Nevada?
It's in, it's near, it's about 75 miles from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Okay. All right, so we're looking for volunteers to participate and to purchase the tickets and man the tables, and I guess, and get the word out. We'll prepare and make a plan of what kind of paperwork we might be able to put up on the table to share with the people to, you know, introduce them to National Liberty Alliance and the work that we're doing here. But go ahead, John.
Yeah, the early bird tickets, which ran out yesterday, are $155 for the two-day expo. They go up a little bit each week until the actual date of 8 and 9 November. Now, the venue is at the Rising Star Ranch Resort, and that's a great vacation place as well. So you could bring your wife or husband and take the kids. Room prices, if you mention you're with the Red Pill Expo, they run $69 to $139. And some of the deals come with breakfast. You just call them and find out what all they have going that's left. Now, there's a great rate on a family room. Apparently, they have one room set up that has a king-size bed, and I think they said bunk beds that would handle 8 people total. So if you have a large family or want to bring some neighbor kids, they can have a great time there. So let's get together and see if we can't get 5 more people to get out there and go to this. Now, this is kind of a really interesting expo to me. I'm going to read a little bit about the presenters they have there. They're going to start off, Dan Happel is the event chairman, and he's going to introduce the master ceremonies. Now, they have a surprise time traveler from the past that's going to appear, and he's going to be interviewed on stage by Dan. Now, who do you think would be most interested in freedom and all that good stuff right now? How about George Washington? So George is going to be there, and his comment is, or his byline is, "So sad you did not follow our written instructions," and amen to that. Now, the next speaker they have is Amon Bundy, son of Clive and Bundy. I'm sure you all know Amon. I've read about him or heard about him or maybe heard some of his DVDs. He was in the Bundy standoff over the grazing on federal land. His topic is, "We're from the government and we're here to help you." So they do have a sense of humor. Now they're going to do down rabbit holes on a lot of different things. For example, for education, they have Michael Rettenwald going to speak. He's an author and former professor at New York University. His talk is going to be about why I am no longer a communist professor. Well, that sounds kind of interesting. The next author in that venue is Alex Newman, who we've heard about. He is a writer for the magazine for the John Birch Society. And he's an expert on many topics, but especially indoctrination masquerading as education. So he's going to talk about behind the education mask. Now, the next down the rabbit hole is going to be sustainable development, and I'm sure you've all heard about that. Richard Ruling, MD, will deliver a red pill presentation. It's going to stun you. Here's a brief summary. Sorry about that. Called Prescription Drugs Kill More People Than Wars. Prescription drugs are today's number one cause of death. And then Michael Shaw will talk about, he's the president of the Freedom Advocates, author of Sustainable Trouble. He's going to talk. Sorry, I didn't know that was still on. He's going to talk about conquest from within, called Agenda 21. And Rosa Kirikiri, I guess it is, author of Behind the Green Mask, head of the Democrats Against Agenda 21, figure that one out. She's going to talk about sustainable development, slogan of deceit. Then we have Jim Carlson. He's an organizer of public interest groups to advise government agencies on public policy. Tactics for reforming government that really works, using good laws to combat corruption in government. The next topic is The Truth is Out There. And its first presenter is Professor Tim Ball. He's a professor who proved that the hockey stick graph of global warming cannot be backed or was not backed by data. And his topic is going to be called I Broke the Hockey Stick. Now, if you remember, Al Gore made millions of dollars on that fandangle. The next one is on the vaccine industry, and it's Pure Evil by Del Bigtree. And then the next one is Who Would Want to Poison the World with Sasha Stone. Then they're going to go down the rabbit hole of 5G. I'm sure you're all familiar with 5G, the latest new coming wireless technology. First presenter is going to be John Sneeson. He's the author of End of Freedom, council member of the Freedom Force International. His topic is going to be 5G, ultimate tool for police state control. And I guess it is. Next will be Richard Lear. He's the founder of the Search for the Cause and maker of Dirty Electricity Filters, the wireless health experiment they never reported. And then Michael Rechtenwald is going to talk about 5G, transhumanism, and the Matrix. Then they're going to go into the stranger than fiction category. And Jerry Day is going to talk. He's a filmmaker, commentator, expert on smart meters and 5G EMF radiation. He says if you can't escape 5G, you must protect against it. Then they're going down the rabbit hole on mass shootings. Another great topic. And Richard Mack is going to be there. He's the constitutional sheriff, defender of the right to bear arms, expert on drug abuse. His topic is civilian disarmament and the war on drugs. Then we're going to have Dr. Ann Blake Tracy. She is an expert on homicidal and suicidal effects of SSRI drugs. Her topic is antidepressant drugs, the hidden cause of mass shootings and suicides. Then we're up for Fasten Your Seatbelts. It's going to be G. Edward Griffin himself, author of The Creature from Jekyll Island. He's the founder of Freedom Force International. He's the creator of the Red Pill Expo. And his topic is going to be When Crooks Become Cops. The next one is Randy Pinocetti. He's a Montana Public Service Commissioner, election campaign strategist, and John is going to love his talk. It's going to be Stop Complaining and Run for Office. And then to wrap things up, they're going to have a call to action with Alex Newman and Happel. So that sounds like a whole long list of great topics and presenters. So if you can...
That's a power-packed 2 days. It's going to be 2 days long, are you saying?
Yeah, it's going to be 2 days chock-a-block.
Wow. That's power-packed. And what are they calling this, a conference, or what are they calling this?
They call it an expo.
An expo? Okay.
Yeah, all
right. And who should people contact you in order to kind of help gather them together for this event?
Yeah, if they would let me know so I know how many people that we have that have signed up, but they need to go to the redpillexpo.gov or org and see what it was. .org, redpillexpo.org to get their hotel rooms and their tickets and lined up. And then please let me know so we can keep track if we get enough to be able to get a table there.
Now, but does that have to be bought, at one shot as a combination, or people are just buying them and then saying they're together as, eight?
They can go in and buy the ticket at any time. The sooner you buy your ticket, the cheaper it is. I think it goes up like $10 a week or something like that, $15
okay.
a week.
And so if, what, six people or eight people come buy tickets and come together for a table, they'll give them a table where we can, share what we do here.
If we have six people buy tickets, general admission, we can have a table. Yep.
All right. Okay, and you got some questions now, I guess. We're open for a Q&A, by the way. Star 6, anybody wants to get into the queue? There's no one in the queue right now, so star 6 to get into the queue. Probably the same as the other program, star 6 and then a 1.
Right.
So star 6 and a 1 to get into the queue. All right, what do we have? What kind of questions do we have?
Okay, number one, what is the best way to clean up a record of null and void cases that are being used to further increase penalties of a current null case?
What is the best way to what? Null and void cases?
Well, apparently they have a record that has a lot of null and void cases, and it's still on the record. They want to know what they can do, because that's being used to further increase the penalties on their current case.
Okay. Well, bear in mind, all of that has to do with equity and not with law. So those cases cannot be used in our cases, courts of law. It is true. I mean, we ourselves do quote a lot of the United States Supreme Court decisions, some of the appellate decisions that have come down that are very good. Most of the time we quote is really using to give a meaning of a phrase or a word or something. But also sometimes, of course, we quote to because the United States Supreme Court is the boss to the 94 federal district courts. And so when they talk, for instance, in Marbury versus Madison, and even in the most recent case that we use a lot is United States versus Williams. Okay, there's a lot of information and clear points that their boss, in other words, the federal district judges, ought to obey. Okay, because the decision of the United States Supreme Court is part of the jurisprudence. It is added to American jurisprudence really to keep these judges in line. These judges are not to make decisions on their own. They're to make rock-solid decisions out of American jurisprudence to rule their court. And again, their court is only really to be dealt with in equity cases, which has to do with government individuals, people who work for government agencies, elected individuals, appointed people, maybe commercial activities, of course, is governed by equity courts. So a lot of corporation activity, any kind of a trade that moves through our nation, again, is controlled by equity courts, and they have the power and the authority to try cases for illegal, transfer. For instance, maybe drugs being brought through the United States illegally, and different things that are illegal. Of course, they have the power and the authority there in the equity courts, but in an equity court, whenever they open up a criminal case, they still have to have a jury, and the judge doesn't have any opportunity to make decisions in a criminal case. But the jury does at that point need to be notified, and that the people that are on trial there have been operating maybe as a government agency or something, within a government agency, and have to abide by certain rules, statutes, codes, regulations that were written by Congress, so that they should be held to those standards. But again, a fully informed jury would also be informed of the fact that, by the way, if you don't like a statute, you think it was too strong or not strong enough, you think maybe calling for a certain penalty is inappropriate or not strong enough, or whatever the case may be, the jury rules in that court. And those positions or ideas need to be made clear to a jury, a trial jury, a petit jury. But again, other than the commercial activities, illegal, drug movement through the nation, or any kind of an activity that markets through the nation, trafficking, let's call it, any kind of illegal trafficking is judged by those equities. But we, the people, own the land. The equity courts have nothing to do with us. They cannot be applied to us in any way. We are to have courts of law. So going back and trying to clean up a record or something, or take things, remove them, or because they may be null and void, and the argument would come, of course, well, who made them null and void? Of course, that'd be another problem, and it just goes on and on and on. We need not bother. We need just always to make sure that we're in a proper jurisdiction, which today, court cases, people are not in a proper jurisdiction. But we have to struggle and work towards opening a proper jurisdiction. You know, we here have been successful so far in opening a proper jurisdiction. Unfortunately, of course, they haven't answered anything, but they also haven't closed us down. They've tried three times in the case that we have open right now. Three times they tried to close us down, but three times they couldn't go forward with it. We can only guess why. We've spoke about that in the past, thinking that maybe it probably is the clerk, because what judge is going to go down there and move records from the filing? Their fingers are not to touch those files. They don't belong there. That's a crime. Removing documents from a file is a crime. And if the clerk is ordered to do that and is under the realization of the fear that, hey, this is maybe a valid common law procedure, which is what we've made clear to these clerks, then maybe the clerks, we think, are probably concerned about removing them and refusing to remove them, say, well, you know, look, if you want them out of there, you move them. I'm suspecting that that's what it might be. We really don't know. We still are filing papers. They are still receiving our papers. We're going to continue to file papers. And even if they stop taking our papers, even if they start returning them, which would be very unwise for them, but even if they were to do that, we're still going to file with them. We're not filing just with them. We are filing with all 94 federal district courts. We're serving upon all the chief judges. We're serving the United States Supreme Court. We're serving U.S. Congress and the U.S. Senate. We're filing with also the federal Justice Department, Attorney General Barr. We are filing with the President of the United States, and we've also made it clear in our paperwork and everywhere else that every paper we filed can be found up on National Liberty Alliance. So people can just go to National Liberty Alliance and come under the grand jury tab and just highlight that and click on Action Against the Judiciary, and they'll find every paper we have filed in the court and every paper we served prior to filing in the court, because we were serving papers for about a year. Quite a few papers, and before we opened our court. So, and of course, we've been indicting people and placing them into the record, same place in the courts. We have filed, a lot of cases, maybe for habeas corpuses and also for non-judicial foreclosures, and we've listed all that out in the court case as evidence, denial of obedience to the law, denial of due process, denial of any law whatsoever, okay, except for their criminal law that they have applied unlawfully, unconstitutionally, a crime of subversion, tyranny, guilty of treason. So any judge that stands upon that is co-guilty of treason along with those traitors who put this together through using the Bar Association, the United States Supreme Court, and all 94 federal district courts, and Congress itself back in 1934. Congress was not that ignorant that they didn't know what was going to be done. Certainly after it was done, they knew what was done. They don't live, under a rock. They know what's going on, and yet they fail to do anything, just like today's Congress fails to do anything. Fails to correct the problems, fails to bring back our law, to bring back our government back under the Constitution, is silent. Whatever being spoken to, you're met by filters, lawyers, bar attorneys, minions of the New World Order. And so they remain silent when you speak to them. And clearly we know a principle, self-evident truth, a decision by the United States Supreme Court. Silence, when you have a duty to speak, is nothing less than fraud. They're all guilty of fraud. And they're all guilty, ultimately, of treason, really, for not doing anything. We've given them time to respond and act, and, you know, we still have the olive branch out there, but that's going to start to disappear as time goes on, and we're going to start to just file more and more indictments. I believe we filed about 100 indictments so far, maybe a little more than that. Quite a few judges, a lot of federal judges, but a lot of, you know, local, state, county, town judges who just refuse to obey the law and continue the fraud of taking people's homes away. And we've laid out that crime, and they just don't care. So when they go to jail at some point in time and suffer whatever penalty is going to be placed upon them, we're not going to care either. All right, anyway, so that particular situation, that problem in a case, trying to go back and you don't be wasting your time doing that. Start challenging the jurisdiction. If you open the case, make the point that you've been moved into jurisdictions unknown. What's going on? What is the civil law? How does Rule 2 have the power and the authority to make changes in the Constitution, to deny we the people of our unalienable right of due process in a court of law? Who are these people? You know, where do you think you get this power? Where do you think that you get this authority? Those are the questions that I'd be battling out in the courtroom if I was in a federal court, especially if they drug me in there. But even if we opened it up, that's exactly what we're talking to them right now. Follow suit with some of the paperwork that we've done. Read our papers. Use some of the, you know, the paragraphs, phrases, sentences that we've used in these cases to make your point, to build your position, to put that judge on notice and demand that this court of record be opened, and let it make it clear that it's fraud on the court, and a lawsuit against them in the future too, once we can get courts of record opened across this nation. And we're only going to do that if we the people step up and take control of this. By the way, you know, we've got a little over 1,000 people who have taken the position of administrators for the administration of the grand jury and the trial jury. But we need altogether about 15,000 people. We believe we'll get that when we hit the critical mass. But right now, you know, we do have 8,000 members. I think we can get some more people who can sign up for that position. It's a full-time job, of course, and it is a well-paid job, a professional position. We are training people right now for that position by taking the courses, and there'll be other things coming down the pike very soon for people to continue with that further education in that. Also, we need approximately 15,000 people across the nation to take up positions of committeemen. We can take back the entire United States. We can take back all of it, and every county we can take back power of the committeemen process. And all we need is really five people per county, or four people per county, let's say. And in the worst case scenario, in theory and in fact, it's more than a theory, let's just to call it in fact, if we can get at least five people elected in a state as elected committeemen, being the only elected committeemen in the entire state, you'd have the ability to take over the entire process in every county and appoint all the people who will do the will of the people, who will take that oath to come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, and to take a course in the Constitution and continue in the process as an appointed committeeman until the next election cycle, where you could teach them how to become elected committeemen. So that's another way, of course, and we do intend on exercising that plan to fill positions, because a lot of positions are filled with decent people trying to do something, but they get depressed and disenchanted quite quickly with that system. I know I did very quickly. Everybody I know got into that. It is very depressing because of all of the unlawful things they do, and the assault and the destruction they do by bringing all these criminals and getting them to take office to run our government. But it's up to the people to stop this. Everybody has got to stop it. And don't think the other guy's doing it, because I can tell you they're not. You got to do it. We got to be the other guy. Okay. And we need Democrats as much as we need Republicans also. You know, I know that there are a lot of Democrats that are not happy with what's going on, and they're going to vote across the aisle to the other side. A lot of them waking up. So again, we're going to want to try to find some Democrats to take back control also. And again, you know, worst case scenario, one elected committeeman in the state takes control of all the systems in every county. One elected committeeman. But we don't want one elected committeeman. We don't, and certainly we want to make sure that those people that take this process up, that they are true to their oath that they take when they join National Liberty Alliance, and to retake that when they take these positions, to come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy in all of their thinkings and dealings, and operate for the sole purpose of the people and not for ourselves. But again, you know, at least five Democrats in every state we need to find and to take back those processes. And then, you know, we can teach them what we did here in New York. People are free to do what they want, but they need to take control of the process. They need to make good rules and get rid of all these sick rules that destroy these committees, the committeemen committees, as much as the committees in Congress and in the Senate. They're destructive. Look at what the Democrats are doing, taking total control. How could that happen? How can we allow that to happen? How could rules be written that allow these people that kind of power, where one person can take total control of the Congress or a small group of people? How could we allow that? How can that be? We need the right rules that will permit that. Okay, we have done that here in New York. We've met here at about 30 or 40 elected committeemen some years back. I think it was 2013 or 12, I forget. But, you know, there was about 30 of us or 40 of us, and we came together. We met both Republicans and Democrats, hammered out a set of rules, and put them into order, into power. Of course, they're not being used because the state's being run by unelected individuals. It's being ruled by party bosses. And so we're going to talk a lot more and really look a lot more over the next coming months to prepare people for taking these positions. Every single person should run for committeeman at least one time in your lifetime. Everybody. So everybody hearing this should run for committeeman now. We need people now. So we need to be primed. You need to learn how to do it. You need to understand what needs to be done. And take these positions. Again, we'll give you all the training and understanding, and we'll let you know all of the problems you're going to be hit with. You know, do everything they can to prevent you from going in to become elected properly. But as long as you just be persistent and keep moving forward, you can do it, and you can take control of this process. Now, a committeeman only requires approximately 40 hours a year. It's an unpaid position, but it is a very rewarding position. It's a very powerful position because you get to sit down and interview. I mean, I think I could enjoy that, to interview these people who want to run for office. Well, I've got a lot of questions for those people. I'm sure they're not going to be able to answer one of them. And that's okay. That's okay. Because we'll tell them where they can go get the answers, and where they can go learn, National Liberty Alliance, take the course, come back. We'll re-interview you again. But you're not getting into office unless you're a statesman. You're not getting into office unless you know enough about the Constitution so that when you raise your hand and say, "I solemnly swear," that you do mean it and you understand it. How can you obey and uphold the Constitution and support the Constitution if you haven't have a clue on what it says? How can committeemen bring people into office that are fit for office, that are qualified for office, if A, they don't know the Constitution themselves, and how can they know whether they know the Constitution? Or if you don't know what it is that that office does, what powers and authorities and jurisdictions they have of the people that you are, you know, putting onto the ballot, okay? And if they, you know, if they don't know, you know, again, their authorities, and they don't know their authorities, what good is any of this? We're just a lost people. Just abandoned in the ocean, subject to the wind. But we need to do this. you need to do this. Everybody needs to do it. 40 hours a year is not a lot of time, not at all. And again, it's in the evenings, a couple hours here and a couple hours there. On the election day itself, of course, you know, for the primaries, you'll be there during the election. Okay, that may be, you know, 6 or 8 hours that you might be at the polling place. And of course, at the election, another 6 or 8 hours, because we get to monitor the process. We get to make sure the votes are hand-counted. We don't care about these machines. You can count all the machines you want, but the vote that's going to count is the ones that we watch and see, and we can document that that took place, because of that also is the job of the committee man, to observe and watch. Not to count the votes, okay, but they are to observe the counting of the votes, to confirm the counting of the votes, to document the counting of the votes, and make sure that it's an honest election, okay? So, you know, if you want a people, if the people want to be free, if you want your liberty, if you want your courts of law, if you want government to leave you alone, to stay out of your living room, to stay out of your bedroom, to stay out of your life, if you want the IRS to just go away and leave me alone, if you want a court of law where you can get justice, that's the cost. Become a committee man at least once in your life. Get involved and get educated. And the other thing is there anybody who doesn't have a career, is looking for a career, become an administrator. Anybody's not happy with the job that they're doing, become an administrator. It's a very well-paid job, and it's a professional job, very rewarding. I mean, after all, you're going to be, you know, the investigative body for the grand jury. You want to talk about fixing problems and stopping tyranny? That's the job right there. You got the power to stop it all on a phone call, on a visit to the office. Because if they don't respond to you, bring them before the grand jury and ask for an indictment. Get that indictment, get them into the courts, and let the people decide and judge these people and deal with them. And let's take back our government. This is consent of government. We control our political process through the committee man. 100%. The committee man has the power of recall. We need no law to tell us we have the power to recall. That is already written in the it's written in the Declaration of Independence. It's written in the Constitution. It's obvious. It's a truth that can't be argued or denied. So again, we need to do this, and we need to take this back. And if people don't do this, then we're not going to take it back. There is going to be a power vacuum. When a hammer comes down, big day Friday coming up, okay, a lot of information is going to be released, the report, okay, crimes are going to be revealed, indictments, I believe indictments are going to be moving right behind it, okay, people are going to be going to court and judged, they're going to be found guilty, the deep state is going to be destroyed, it would take them out. This is the opportunity. Because once the deep state is destroyed, there will be a power vacuum in our government. And if we the people do not fill that vacuum, fill those positions by taking up the committeemen and taking up the administration for the courts, then they will, and we'll be right back here again. We'll have a rerun in the near future, and your children will suffer. Okay, any other questions? I know that was long, but... it's had a lot to say on that. Again, anybody wants to get into the queue? We only got a couple of people in the queue, star 6 and a 1. Jan, hope I didn't put you to sleep again. Must be muted. You can't unmute. All right, well, I'll take a question, and when you get your problem fixed, we can have more questions, okay? So we'll take our first caller here. Let's see, we've got Dawn from Nevada, it looks like. Dawn, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Oh, hi. This is Gary, right?
This is John.
Oh,
okay, let me see if I can unmute Jan. Hold on 1 minute. I guess he's saying I got to unmute him. No, you know what? Your phone might have disconnected, Jen. Look on your phone on your that little thing that they gave you. Make sure it's red. If it's not red, click on the phone and you'll be redialed back in. If that may be, there you go. So, but let's finish off with first caller before you pick back up the mic, Jan. Dawn from, where was that, Nevada, is it?
Yes, Las Vegas. Okay. I have a question about the government by consent course. How mm-hmm. do I get that course?
Well, if you go on to nationallibertyalliance.org, okay, and you can click on, courses, and you can sign up on the government by consent course right there. You have to be a member, obviously, and you have to be a premier member to take the course. A premier member is someone who is donating $5 a month or more. So you have to go and make a donation of $5 a month or more, and then just go click on the government by. I mean, you've got to be a member before you do that. And,
I did that.
And okay, you did that.
Get a hold of
Jan, and he'll try to connect you with Carl to try to fix your problem. You know how to get a hold of Jan? He's under the directory.
I was able to email him.
All right. Yeah, he'll work out the problem for you.
All right, okay. Thank you.
All right. Okay, let's, Jen, let's take the next questions before we take the next caller.
Okay, can cases older than 10 years be joined?
Sure, why not? Do we know what kind of case?
It doesn't say.
There is no statute of limitation in common law because there is no statutes. Okay. What keeps a case ripe is the only thing that maintains a court case to be able to continue. It could be 30 years old. It doesn't matter. As long as you can still prove the case 30 years later, find the witnesses and the documentation and so on and so forth, then of course, you can continue to pursue for justice. And even if you've lost the case, bear in mind, if you lost the case, you were in jurisdictions unknown, you were defrauded, yes, you can bring that back up. If you do that, make sure that Jim knows that. Put a note in the filing paper that this case is 10 years old, and we might want to talk a little bit about it, but I don't see any reason why we couldn't take that on. All right, what other question?
And do I go to small claims court for each individual said case?
I don't understand what case.
Well, that's just the old case is over 10 years old. It was just the previous question.
Oh, no. Small claims court's not going to be able to do anything to you. They're going to ignore you or just think you're a nut or whatever. They're not going to do nothing. No, you have to do it yourself. You have to go back to that court. And I'd have to think it out on, you make a plan on how I would do that. So, you know, When you're filing cases and doing things, you have to learn to think. And, of course, thinking comes with experience. You know, the more experience you have, the more ideas, thoughts, and experiences you have. And you can figure a plan and go forward with it. You know, me, I would go in. Let me think how I would approach this. I would probably go back and reopen the case up and, of course, they're going to try to shut it down real quick. Make my point to the fact that, hey, I was in this court. This is what happened. I was in jurisdictions unknown. I'm discovering I was in civil court, but I belonged in a natural law court. I've been defrauded, and I want justice. Something like that is where I would start. But I wouldn't expect to get much mileage there, that they're going to do anything to, you know, give you justice, because they're keen on injustice. And by the way, anybody else wants to get in the queue? We still only have a few people in the queue, star 6 and a 1. Jen, any other questions?
How do you enforce a default on tacit acquiescence?
Well, as long as you went into the court, you filed the papers, and they did not respond, and you didn't get kicked out on any of those rules. You know, I think it's Rule 12 they love to kick people out on. And that's done. Well, all you have to do, it depends on your wherefore clause. Hopefully you got a good wherefore clause and it's very well defined on what you're expecting to get out of this. So if it's clear cut, okay, all you got to do this anyway. First, you write an affidavit of default. You lay out the basic idea. You can probably get an example of that up on our website. You can probably find that under, hang on a minute. Where did I put that? I thought I put it under courses. Maybe education. Hold on. Yep, I put it under education. There's a page there that's called Court Forms, Processes, and Instructions. So you can probably get an example of an affidavit of default there. Now, to get to that particular page, you have to be a premium member. And a premium member, again, is someone giving $5 a month or more. It's only $60 a year. Most people can afford that, I'm sure. And, give up one cup of coffee and a donut or a roll and butter or whatever a month. That's all you got to do. Just give one of those up. That's your $5, and you'll be supporting us and helping the cause to move forward. But anyway, you can get those forms there. So you fill out an affidavit of default. You file that affidavit of default with the clerk. The clerk will give you a paper, a document. You want to bring the court case, the copy of the case, that you put on underneath the affidavit of default, and you make two copies. The clerk will timestamp that and give you, I think they'll give you a form or a paper, but you could take that. Once it's timestamped that it's been filed, okay, I think that's all you need if I recall, then you could take that down to the sheriff and execute judgment. Okay. Now, the clerk will stamp it and seal it for you, providing the wherefore clause is clear cut. If it's obscure and has to be defined, and there's no mathematical equation on whatever monies and all this other stuff that you're looking for, if that's not clear, then you'll be deferred back to the judge, and then you'll have to work it out, and the judge will have to make the final decision on that. What is clear on the papers as far as the wherefore clause, which is again what you're asking for the judgment, and that should be it. Then you take it to the sheriff, and the sheriff will execute it. The sheriff will take 10% off the top of everything he collects, but at the end of the day, he will collect 110% because we don't pay. You don't pay the 10%. The other side pays the 10%. I forget what they call that. They have a name for that particular charge that they give. But anyway, that's it. So, any other questions?
Yeah, we have quite a few yet. Now that we're in the process of filing documents, is our organization strong enough to impact and affect change and to see justice served?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Can you repeat that, Jen?
Yeah. Now that we are in the process of filing documents, is our organization strong enough to impact and affect change and to see justice served?
Well, again, you have to pay close attention to the plan and be involved, okay? And we've been talking about this for quite some time. We have to hit critical mass. It's up to the people whether this is going to happen or not up to me. It's not up to National Liberty Alliance on its own. No, it's up to the people, okay? The people have to be there. Guaranteed, no doubt in my mind, if we get 30,000 people involved, okay, taking over the committee man process and knocking, banging on the doors of the court to take back our courts of law, that combined with indictments flowing and a deep state going down, no doubt, we're going to be in like Flynn. And besides that, if we get that numbers of people, and we don't even really need 30,000. 30,000 is the ideal number, okay? That's the ideal number. We can work with less. Maybe, let's say, I think the minimum maybe be about 15 or 20,000. But anyway, and that I think would be the bare minimum. But in any way, once we get that, we also would get the people, there would be more people involved with us that aren't taking those positions, and that would give us the critical mass. So that's number one. Remember what Gandhi said, okay? Gandhi said, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. We have to be persistent, and it has to be the people, okay? And we're not just a bunch of people from New York or anything, or some other state, or some little corner of the country. No, we are in every single state of the Union. We are very well organized. We have established a unified state grand jury in every single state. The state pulled together all of the counties. Our members have visited all of the counties, with the exception, some counties we did two or three at a time, especially the counties that were very scarcely populated. And so they were invited over to the county next door or whatever for these meetings. And we were met, it was very positive. I'd love to say we had 100%. I can tell you it's close to 100% agreement with the things we were doing. Occasionally we get a troublemaker here or there. It destroyed that possibility. But we're up there 95, 98%, maybe even higher than that, of the people agreeing, to bring back the common law. Yes, this is our heritage. Yeah, we do want our grand juries. We want free and independent grand juries, trial juries. We want justice in the courts. So we have organized across the nation. We probably have at least probably two-thirds or three-quarters of the counties. We have people in counties. And of course, we have people in every state. So organizing across the nation in all 50 states, including Hawaii and Alaska, okay, organizing in all 50 states, we then came together and organized the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury as the spearhead to fight this case on the federal level to take back the courts. Now, meanwhile, we're expecting that all these people that have taken these positions and are doing these things are educating themselves and preparing themselves to either take back control on your grassroots level when that time happens, or help support the people who are taking back the control on the grassroots level. You know, if you have a job and you can't, you don't want to take the administration job, but you need to be there to support the people that are taking that position. Everyone, again, like I said, everyone, every single human being needs to think about becoming a committee man. You want me to go shut that off now? Everybody needs to be thinking about becoming a committee man, okay? And now is the time to do it. It's coming up, and this year coming up, this is when to do it. And we will be taking power in 2001. And it's extremely important that we do that, because we can start recalling all these people that are problematic. You know, when Trump gets reelected and takes his position again, right after this position in 2001, we could be there to make sure that these people do their job and stop disobeying the Constitution and get rid of these people who decide that they're not going to obey the Constitution, or they're going to take that funny money and line their pockets or empower themselves more, and all that stuff. In the Constitution, it talks about emoluments, if I'm pronouncing that right. And what that is accepting money, a job, or anything that really, brings you a monetary, advancement by you. Anything that, that means if you use your office in order to make money or to have more power or to have your children take positions and get a big fat check, like we see with the big thing on the news right now, that's unlawful. Right in the Constitution, it's clear. The emoluments clause. We can stop all that. We can enforce the law, okay? That, we could deal with all those problems. We could do recalls. But we can't do any of those things, and we'll have none of those powers if we don't step up and take these positions. So we got to take them. Okay, anything else?
Yes, with the documents being served, what kind of backlash or retaliation might we expect? How can we be protected?
I'm sorry again, repeat it again.
With the documents that were being served, what kind of backlash or retaliation might we expect? How can we be protected?
Well, I've thought about that. I try not to think about it often. I'm still moving around and doing things. And, they've sent, I've been visited three or four times by federal agents. And it's been good conversations I've had with them. I always open my house to them, welcome them in, sit down, have a conversation with them, and answer their questions. And they always walk out and say, well, I don't even know why we're here, usually they've been sent by a judge. That's why they've come to see me. And so we haven't had any real problems, okay? You know, the IRS has been on me since 1999. I've been able to stay ahead of them, and I've had a win, a big win, not long ago, a couple of years back. But they never let you go. I was listening to the president speak. I forget where he was speaking. His speech is always good, and he talked about that he himself is being targeted by the IRS, and he said he's going to do something about that. So let's see what he's going to do, and maybe we're going to do something to try to help the president to move along on that kind of thinking, especially people who are being targeted by the IRS. You know, that's it. You know, I'm not going to sit and worry about what they can do to me or what they might do to me. You know, we'll never get anywhere, you know. I'm not braver than anyone else, definitely not a brave guy or anything, but nevertheless, I still say, give me liberty or give me death. And I do believe that, and I do hold to that, you know. I'm not a young kid no more. I'm going to roll around in the dirt, but if I got to, I'll do the best I can. But I don't know what else to say. We need to look at when the people fear the government, you got tyranny. So that tells you something. It's time to make the government fear the people. And then we will have liberty. And that's what we're doing here. It comes in numbers. There's protection in numbers. You know, maybe I'm okay and things are okay to a certain degree because we have a lot of numbers. We're exposed everywhere. We've been talking to these people for a long time. We've been calling them on the carpet. We've been telling them all of the sins that they have been committed and put it on paper and filed it to them and served it on them and filed it in courts and filed it all over places that I mentioned earlier. And maybe that's protecting us. But ultimately, look, I've always rested in Christ and God, and I just don't worry about it. He's going to take care of me. I believe I'm doing His will. I have the ability to do certain things, so I'm doing them. I have the knowledge of these things. I've built up the knowledge of these things. I've had an interest in them, so I've built up a knowledge in these areas. They're godly things. You know, what are we doing? What are we really doing? We are trying to bring back God into our nation. That's exactly what we're doing. Nothing less than that. He is the king of the court. He is the one true sovereign of the universe. And we're sovereign only because he gives us to be sovereign over our government, okay? But he is the one true sovereign. And when he sits in the court and people are ruling from their hearts and ruling with their hearts and with their minds through maxims, self-evident truth, then God is in the court ruling. And if we require, law in our courts and justice in our courts, then we are going to require that the people who represent us are doing these lawfully and staying within their jurisdiction and doing the right thing and not taking bribes, funny money from special interest groups. They're called bribes. That's what they're called, bribes. You know, we do those things and we make sure that they're not taking that money and they're doing the right thing. So we now brought justice into our political process. I'm going to tell you something that people are going to say is not possible, but I'm going to tell you that, and I'm going to lay that out on a paper shortly, and that is we can get rid of the politics out of the political process, 100%. All we have to do is bring justice back into the courts and require our elected officials to obey the law, and politics just disappeared. No more funny money. You know, we have to provide a place, and National Liberty Alliance is working on that too, is to provide a place where people can come and get their political information. You know, they put in their zip code, for instance. We're going to set up a website eventually this way. We're working on the plans. We're just waiting, hoping for the money soon. But sometime soon, hopefully, we're going to put up a new website, and it'll be much more sophisticated, much more integrated, much more involved, especially in government understanding. And we will list all of the different elected individuals within, you know, any election district, you know, whether it's within your town, your county, your state, or the federal government. You know, all of the people that you might have a place where you would elect. Every election district, it's in, maybe it's your, you fit into assembly district and you get to question the people running for the assembly in your state or for a state senator. You're in your Senate district and you go and meet in that committee or and so on and so on, all of the committees, okay? So we put these people in power, and so we need to understand what their job is. So people should have a place, and it'll be National Liberty Alliance. They'll come in, put their zip code in. They don't know their nine-digit zip code. There'll be a link there which you can click on, and you put your address in, and it'll give you the other four digits. And once you have those four digits with the first five digits of your zip code, so it's a nine-digit zip code, that ties you right into an election district, okay? So you'll know exactly what your election district is. And whoever's running for office that coming election period, whether it be the primary or the election itself, you would put in your zip code, and you would see all of the different people running for the different offices. And then you would be able to click on the office to see what the powers and the authorities of that office is, what's their jurisdiction, do they get to appoint people, who do they appoint, so on and so forth. Okay, then you see all the people running for office, you get to click on them, and get a 500-word essay, maybe. I don't know. We haven't figured out 500 or 1,000-word essay. I don't know. Where they tell us, the people, why we should vote for them. And, of course, first we have to put them on the ballot. Okay? And that's where the committee man comes in. So now the people, they've been brought into the process. The people who have taken a course on the Constitution, they appear to be statesmen, and they're willing to take the oath. Because in order to take the course, they've got to take the oath to come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. So they take that oath to God. It's a vow to God. And now they've given their 500-word essay or whatever it is that we're going to work out the number is. And then at the bottom of their essay, they'll have a link to go to their website to learn more. With that kind of a system set up, if people have a place to go to get that information, they don't need money to run for office. Because they're running really for a purpose to do a job for the people and not for themselves, not to empower themselves or enrich themselves. They're running for office and they're willing to take the constitutional course. And people need nothing more than that than to just have information. You know, what they get money, what do? They run TV ads to destroy the other person. They write letters and things to people, tell them all kinds of stupid things and promises that they never really mean. Or they say things they shouldn't be saying about the other guy. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's all politics. All that disappears if we have true government by the consent of the people through controlling the political process and the judicial process. Politics is gone. Doesn't exist no more. And like I say, I'll write a paper on that soon to lay that out, maybe a little more clearer. And that's where we need to get. Okay. Okay. Did I answer the question, by the way?
Yep.
Okay, good.
Next question. I was wondering, did the court return the filing with the deficiency report to the grand jury? I know it did not come to me, so if it was not returned to the grand jury, then it's just another failure of our court procedures.
Well, we do have a list of things, of papers that we have received back from different courts, the 94 federal district courts that we have served. We're giving them time to repent and do something. We're going to eventually go through that list and give them a little more time to do something or suffer the consequence, which will be an indictment for failure to speak to begin with, for being fraudulent, and to continue to uphold repugnant civil law over and above the law of the land, denying us courts of due process, courts of jurisdictions that's proper. And for all that, we're going to go after them. But that's going to take a little time. Now, I'm not aware of getting any papers back directly on any court case that we have brought in to our court case yet. We're in the process. We did amicus curiae's. Usually they've been responding back to some of the people in a negative fashion. And again, you know, look, we don't care. We really just think about it. Why should we care? If they don't want to be obedient to the law, we're going to continue to do what we got to do, and we're going to pursue justice. Justice may be slow in coming. Maybe we'll indict today, and they're not going to be able to do anything for a year or 6 months. That's fine. Look, it's all about winning the war. We don't need to win the battles. You know, Washington lost a lot of the battles, probably most of the battles from what I've read in history. It lost a lot because we just never had the armies, enough people, supplies, and hit with hard weather and then traveling long distances and then being overwhelmed by the enemy and so on and so forth. But they always survived. They always were able to continue to move forward. And at the end of the day, we won the war. And that's the most important thing. So people who are trying to look at this thing and say, well, you didn't win there, you didn't win there, you didn't accomplish this, you didn't accomplish that. No, we haven't accomplished much in the courts because they're all lawless, okay? But we put it on record, and it's become a nail in their coffin. It is part of the evidence used against them, and the day will come again. You know, Gandhi said, you know, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, and then you win. Okay? But we have to be persistent to do that. We have to, you know, pray for some bravery to do that, I guess, you know. And think of the good things and pray and talk to God, have a relationship with your Maker, and rest that He will protect you. You know, He says He will protect us. I trust He's going to protect me. I believe I'm one of His children, and He's going to protect His children just as much as I would protect my own children, and even Him more so. So that's where we rest. Okay.
Okay, I've been studying this for almost 5 years now. I've come across using the Treasury direct accounts to pay bills. I've also attempted creating a presentment to the IRS with all my bills attached. The outcome was this. 2 months after they received the presentment, they sent me a letter that it was negative, saying to be careful in that practice I'm getting involved in. But on the front, as in a cover letter, it was basically a blank page with a coupon at the bottom of it and a barcode. Of course, I was hesitant to respond and ignored it based on the negative response and the threat of jail. But I came across a post from Anna Von Ritz that explained that this barcode and coupon was something I was supposed to return to them so they can balance the books. I found out a year later, so it was too late for me to send it in, of course. Have any of you considered paying bills using the ultimate bookkeeper, the IRS, or rather the Internal Revenue Service? I've also learned that the IRS and the Internal Revenue Service are different entities. It is the Internal Revenue Service that is our friend. Any comment?
Well, look, there's a lot of people out there teaching a lot of strange things, and you know, I'm not saying that these things are untrue. You know, I've learned them myself when I first started to get involved in trying to figure things out and go to learn of other people. And, you know, but I'm one of those people that I don't take anything just where it's face value alone. I always dig in deep. I want to make sure, especially something this serious, I want to make sure this is right. I'm just not going to respond because someone said it was right. We have left the idea of taking the position of the man on the land stuff because it doesn't get you anywhere. You look crazy to the people on the outside that don't know what's going on. They laugh at you from the people on the inside. And eventually you'll trip up and they will put you in jail. I will tell you that we did have one individual who was a member here. I'm not even going to give the state or anything. And he did go forward with exactly what you're talking about, and he did get a check out of them for a big check, $100,000+, and he did cash that check, and he did start paying bills and doing different things with that, however, you know, the process he went through to get it. And within 30 days, he found his door broken down, he was dragged into court, and they're putting him in jail. Now, he was able to escape, okay, he wasn't home when they came. And he, you know, we've talked with him on numerous occasions while he was on the lam. He would call in here or there. But I haven't heard from him in quite some time. I'm wondering if he was finally caught and arrested and maybe in jail. So if you want to, if you're not worried about going to jail, you can try these things. I wouldn't. If you are worried about going to jail, definitely don't do these things. Nobody's got the real way of doing things. And I can tell you right now, and I hate to say this, but look, I got to say what it is. Anna Von Ritz is not one of us, okay? Anna Von Ritz is part of a process, and she came up in contrast to National Liberty Alliance. she appeared some years ago, and she even tried to recruit us and bring us into her fold and so on and so forth. But after looking into what she was doing and how she was approaching it and what we were learning about the law and so on and so forth, we found that we were incompatible. And then we found numerous things. She had come into a couple of different places. We had, you know, she came in and took over some of our membership out in Colorado. And most of all those people, I guess there was about a half a dozen or maybe a little more, they're in jail. And we tried to stop them from doing this. We cut them off from National Liberty Alliance because we don't want to be connected with that kind of stuff. We don't need those fights. We got enough to fight to get the law back, you know. So, yeah, I would not mess with any of that. They're going to get you. This is their sandbox. Remember this. This is their sandbox. And they don't care about justice. And they'll set you up. And maybe that's what that letter is about. Then they can feel... Then they could say, hey, well, we warned you about this, and you went and you did it anyway. And you go into jail. They love to give 6 years. That seems to be their time. They'd like to put people in jail for 6 years. And so I would advise 100% against that. We don't need to learn those things. It's all fraud. It has nothing to do with us, really. It's a game they played, you know. We were born, we're worth a certain value because we're, you know, we're like chattel to them. And as we get older and do certain things, you know, we're worth more money and we can push our bills against this. And I mean, on and on and on. I mean, what kind of a setup is this? You know, first of all, that was they claim, and again, I haven't got real deep knowledge in this because I left it, all right? But the claim is that in the negotiations of our slavery, that deal was made, that we'd have a value and we'd be able to, you know, pay our bills by using those things. And if that's true in itself, for that alone, I don't want their stupid money. I'm not their slave. Again, give me liberty or give me death. That needs to be our motto. That needs to be our attitude. And again, resting in God, that in protection. Rest in truth, you know. We're doing the right thing, and get your own house in order, be doing the right thing in life the best you can, and do the right thing if you have that opportunity on the biggest stage. This is that biggest stage. You're hearing, you're learning, you're seeing, you got the opportunity to do the right thing. Get away from all that other garbage. It's just nothing but fraud. It's going to get you in trouble. It's not going to accomplish anything, and it doesn't settle the problem. You're still, at the end of the day, you're their slave, even if you were to get the money and being able to use these things. So don't play with it. Playing with fire. Okay. Are we done with questions?
And then we have
move
one
to
more
the Q&A. Okay.
One more. When your case against the entire judiciary prevails, will it, along with the other positive changes about to transpire in this country with regards to slowly returning to common law, eventually address the unconstitutionality of mandating driver's licenses upon the everyday traveler versus those engaged in commercial activity, among many other things too lengthy to mention? Also, what is the status of the release of the book that John periodically mentions on the call that would accompany the government by consent course?
Okay, well, the government by consent course, some people know this, but most people don't know this. It's not completed yet. I'm still working on it. And with all the stuff we've been doing and writing the past month or two, I haven't really been able to get back to it, but I do plan, you know, hopefully I'm working on a very important paper right now that needs to be filed. And I'm also working on another short paper to be filed also. So this week I'll be working on that. And I do have to deal with starting up maybe some habeas corpuses. We're going to do one, at least. We may be doing two. You know, but we will be doing habeas corpuses again. But that's going to take a little time for me to put my time in to review the paperwork we had. Maybe it's got to be, you know, updated a little bit. You know, every day we learn more and more. So, you know, we get, you know, we can couch things in a better way. My book is running alongside the course. I've already got a lot of things that I've come up with that I've been collecting that I'm going to be putting in the book that won't be in the course. But I'll try to squeeze as much as I can into the course. But the book, you know, and again, we're going to try to sell the book, you know, as regular books would go, maybe $19.95 or whatever the cost is, you know, the general cost. And all of that money will go to support NLA and of course, my life to some degree. But you know, I put my money right back into NLA. You know, that book, I would really, anybody who's going to go into court, learn about history, American history, learn about the common law, learn about the differences of laws, how many laws are there, how many different jurisdictions, where do they fall upon. And by the way, there's only one jurisdiction of law, only one. You know, there are 51 jurisdictions in Black's Law, 51 jurisdictions, and one of them is law, the only one called law. And that's natural law. Everything else is well, then there's equity. And to my knowledge, there is, well, it's not, it's fact, okay? To my knowledge, I know, okay? There's only one country, one nation, one country that has the ability to have true equity. True equity is positive law, okay? Positive law is authoritative law. American jurisprudence is the authority of that equity. It goes right back to the common law. It still rules on the common law, but it controls our government. You know, it may, you know, it these laws, the laws in equity, you know, again, control different federal agencies, control the President of the United States. You know, Title III lays out the powers and the authorities, the jurisdiction of the President. And penalties, should something go, you know, should he do the wrong thing. Title II lays out the powers and the authorities of Congress. Title I is general provisions for all of the titles, okay. Title 28 is for judiciary and the procedure of judiciary. And Title 18 applies to really all of them, because in there is the penal code. If they break the law and it becomes a criminal act, and they're going to be maybe judged in a criminal court. So that does come to play, but the people have the power and the authority to nullify those laws, and that they can do what they please, because they're going to give justice, and justice is not a written prescription by Congress. That's for sure. So all of those things are there. So we have that one law, and that is the law of the land, ultimately, which pulls in also the Constitution. Constitution, you know, we received our power from God, our unalienable rights, and the right to have government by consent, and we wrote the Constitution, so we're above the Constitution. The Constitution gives the authority to the three branches, and they have to. They're underneath the Constitution. They have a clipped power, a clipped sovereignty, a clipped, I guess, clipped sovereignty is the word we use, and so on. So again, knowing those things. Can you repeat the question one more time? Because I'm, you know, sometimes I get lost in all this stuff and I forget the question. Make sure I answered it.
Okay. When your case against the entire judiciary prevails, will it, along with the other positive changes about to transpire in this country with regards to slowly returning to common law, eventually address the unconstitutionality of mandating driver's licenses?
Okay. Yep, I got it. That was the other part of it. Well, first, you know, again, the book will come out, and the book will be available. The book, I believe, is powerful. We want to make sure our sheriffs get a copy of that book. You know, common law back into the courts is going to happen one day. We're going to have the success against the United States Supreme Court. There's no doubt in my mind and heart about that. I see what's going on. It's got to happen. It cannot not happen. And you know what? President Trump knows it cannot not happen. And the more and more I listen to Trump and the people around Trump, I was hearing a lawyer talking, and he brought up the common law. He said a few things that kind of rang a bell in my mind, because I had just written to them about that. And every once in a while, I kind of hear something, and I don't know, is that a coincidence that they've come to realize those things too, or did they say those things because they learned from us? You know, I don't know. I don't care how they learned it anyway. But the thing is they're coming around. And Trump wants to bring this nation back and put it back to where it belongs. That cannot be done. unless we visit the sins of our nation, these people who have destroyed us, okay? We have to visit them. They have to have their day in court, and they have to face justice. You cannot fix this government, you cannot fix this nation without fixing the problem, and justice be served so it never happens again. The people need to know, okay, so we don't repeat this history. And a lot of people don't know the truth, and the truth is going to be hard to swallow, but it's going to happen, and their people are going to be appalled. It's going to be unbelievable at first. They'll be in denial for a while, but the evidence will become so overwhelming they'll have no other choice but to take it in. That, with the fact of their experience in life, realizing little things about this here and there, you know, yeah, that was wrong. I always knew this and that and the other thing, you know, the IRS, or maybe I was in court for something, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that has to come. We cannot have half justice. We cannot have part justice. We can't have some justice. Either we have justice or we don't have it at all. That's it, period. And there's nothing else to talk about there. We can't have half a liberty. We can't have some of our liberty. Either we have liberty or we don't have liberty. That's it. If we only have part liberty, then we're slaves to them, aren't we? They control us. And right now, any liberty you really think you have, it's an illusion. You don't have, going to court, and a lot of people with us know this, so, but those who don't, get your day in court, and you're going to find out how much Constitution you really have, how much unalienable rights you truly do have, and how much that Constitution protects those rights. And it is nil, none, zero, nothing. It is, we are as bad as a third world nation in our courts. The justice system is the most corrupt in the world, my opinion, the most corrupt in the world, okay? We can't have a piece. We can't have half. We can't have some. It's all or nothing, and that's it. Trump knows this. There's no doubt in my mind he knows this. And that's why I do believe, you know, we're going to get help from him. Maybe not directly, but indirectly, you know, it's going to happen. He's going to support it behind the scenes. However he does it, he's going to support the fact that the people need to take control of their government, that we need to have government by consent. We need to take control of our courts. We need to take control of our political process. And we've got to put these people in jail and end this insanity and bring us back to a nation of justice again. And this nation will be only as just as its courts are. And the people who run this country will only be as just as our courts are. If we make our courts just, we will become a just people, not only within our nation on ourselves, but on the world stage. We will be just and seen as such. And that's an encouragement. That brings us back to bringing the light, you know, in the city on the hill, okay? And other governments, other people will want to do what we do. And nations, they can do that. They can turn their nation, their countries around and say, we want a constitution and we want to write it. And maybe take a look at ours and see, you know, I used to say years ago, you know, take a look at ours. We're not using it anyway. You can use it. Take a look at ours and form something for yourself and become a common law country where government doesn't get to rule over you. Government has nothing to do with you. You owe them nothing. So they can't tell you nothing. They can't require nothing of you. They shouldn't be able to take money from you. All taxes need to be lawful. Lawful taxes only. Okay? And all the money that the IRS collects, if you think it goes into our roads, our schools, or anything, well, I got a bridge in Brooklyn. It's up for sale, and I'm selling it. Because it doesn't go anything for that. They take all that money. Okay, that's their profit to begin with. I'm sure, you know, they took gold and silver. They've been robbing around the world anyway. But that money that they comes through there, you know, basically, ultimately, they just go print more money. And they'll put out billions of dollars to support different groups in order to push forward their socialist agenda. They're supporting all that, you know. We should get that kind of support. Lord willing, maybe we will. But in any event, this is what's going on, and so justice is there, and in the White House, I believe, and Trump has become a reformed man. He's become much, much better. I'm sure much more humbler. I mean, he's still a proud man. I think I still kind of see that, But I also see that he's becoming more and more humble. He's learned a lot since he's been in office and so on. Okay, now to the driver's license. You know what, that's a tricky one, but here's what I think. First of all, our children shouldn't be in school any longer than 9 years. In 9 years, our children should be able to receive, you know, achieve a college-level education. Not a college education that gives them some kind of a specialty like being a doctor or something, you know. Of course, that's an extended education. But as far as the basics, our history and our sciences and our mathematics and so on, our knowledge of that should be a college-level education. I know it could be done because I've seen it done. And I've seen it done in families of children, and they're not all special children that they were so bright and born, geniuses or something. No, they're just people, children, and who were trained the right way in schools that I've seen achieve a college education in 8 or 9 grades. The common system should be that way. You know, I'm thinking sending our children to school at age 5, which I think is the general 5 and 6. Maybe another year or two later, maybe we should keep them home further. There's studies that go both ways on that, and that's some research I'd like to do because eventually we're going to play a role in trying to change the minds and hearts of people on education and make sure people get a proper education. It's called the classical education, where children learn to think, not are taught what to think, but learn how to think. That's a classical education. We need to get that. We need to get civics in the school. We need to get constitutional studies in the school. Our children need to be able to come out of school with the ability to articulate themselves well enough on a stage or in a court of law and take care of their own battles, their own business. Why not? Why not? This is all really simple stuff. It's just a matter of learning it and learning to think, teaching our children to think for themselves. 1 and 1 is 2, 2 and 2 is 4, and so on. Law is constructive. You place one piece of thing on top of another, you build your case. It's a constructive process, building a case. Okay? Now, I think schools should also, you know, when I went to school, I had driver's ed, and I took that, in the driver's ed, I learned to drive, and I got my license early. I got my license when I was 16 in New York City. 17 in New York City. Upstate it was 16, but New York City, you know, you had to be 18. But I got a year earlier because I had taken a year or two early. I had taken the course, the driver's ed course. I think every child should go through a driver's ed course. I think that should be part of their education, to learn the rules of the road. It's good to stop at a red light. You know, it's good to stop at a stop sign. It's good to obey the rules of the road. You also have a little ability to make decisions on your own. You know, you're coming into a place and you stop at a red light and you can hear the crickets chirping and there's not a light and there's not a car around. So you stop and then you go. You pass the light. Why do you need to sit there any longer? You know, it's just common sense. But anyway, I think there should be a process teaching our children. We also do need a good ID. So maybe through the school process and through the state, we can work something out. The problem is making sure the government doesn't use that information. I don't think people should be forced to have an ID. You certainly shouldn't be forced to have a driver's license. But again, we should be responsible to teach our children, and people should be responsible should they get into an accident and they don't have insurance. You know, they're going to have to be responsible. They're going to have to answer to the law. But in any event, driver's license shouldn't be a requirement. But we should somehow have a picture ID. You know, kids in school, they get picture IDs in their school, and that qualifies as something, as an ID. And maybe the state should give us an ID, but you should be able to go in and renew your picture from time to time for whatever the cost might be, $5, $3 or whatever, but shouldn't be anything crazy. You know, they really beat us up every, I don't even know what they were paying for our licenses anymore. It's ridiculous. And they do it every, I think, 6 years or something. I forget. But in any event, we got to work that out. you know, and so that's my take on that. But as far as driving, you know, we don't want people just to go onto the road. So we have to be, you know, without knowing anything. So we have to be a little responsible, and we could do that in our schools when children are going through school. But in the last year of school, they should be taking driver's ed. And when they get out, they should be able to drive. You know? All right. Is that the last question?
Yes. No more questions.
Okay. We've got people in the queue, so let's go into the queue and move things along. I didn't see Brent in here, so we'll continue going forward, and we're running late anyway. And again, I apologize for starting so late tonight. So let's take another caller. The next caller is a 480 number, 480-258 number. What's your first name and your state? And next time anybody that comes into the room, you know, you always have that opportunity to put your name and state in there. So just put your name, first name, and your state so we know roughly, you know, who we're talking to some degree. But what's your name and state, first name and state?
Yeah, Sean in Arizona. So if you
Sean
call
in Arizona.
On the phone, how do you put your name in?
Oh, well, that's okay because you're coming in now and someone's already typing your name, Sean from Arizona. So when you come in on this 480 number, we're going to know. We already see you now.
Awesome.
C-A-N, comma, A-Z. And usually people, when they come in, a lot of phone calls give an ID already, so it might have a name and a it won't have a state, but it'll have a name.
Got it.
But go ahead, Sean.
So I was listening to part of the committeeman. Is there a specific call for that as far as getting more instruction and more?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we're going to be given deep instructions very soon. Sometime in the next couple of weeks, we're going to do a three-hour thing just on the committeeman. We're going to talk only on the committeeman. I'll do a little more in-depth teaching. I may do a PowerPoint right online here because we could do PowerPoints in this program. So I'll be able to share my screen. Anybody coming in using the app will be able to see my screen. Anybody coming in and using the browser to come in, you'll be able to see our screen. The only ones that won't be able to see the screen is people coming in on a regular telephone. They won't be able to see the screen, but you'll be able to hear it. You know, I mean, it's nice to have the word flow as we talk and teach about this. But we're going to be very specific, and we're going to teach people a lot of things, and we're going to show you and explain to you how people think they're elected and all the different things that are being done to make people think they're elected. And we're going to show how they're not elected by those processes. And we're going to show them the only way they can be elected. And you know what? Even if your state law doesn't provide for what we're going to talk about, you still can do it because we have the unalienable right to have government by consent. We, the people, have the power and the authority and the right to be the ones to decide who gets on that ballot. So the people who decide that is one person from every election district. They get to decide, okay, who goes on to the ballot. So if you go into an assembly district meeting, for instance, the assembly committee that's meeting to talk to people who want to run for the assembly, those lines sometimes cross over different counties, but, you know, you'll be able to know what district you're in and, what political subdivision that might be. And you get to participate with the questioning of these people that want to take these positions in office. And then collectively we make a vote on it and decide. We may not agree on the same, but you see, you know, even if half the group wanted to go one way and the other half group goes the other way, well, that's fine. Then we'll be putting two people running for assemblyman through the primary challenge there in the primary election, and only one will succeed to be able to run in the actual final election. But that's the process. And right now, the people don't have that control. They don't have that process. There are five individuals. Listen very carefully. This is rarely not the case. Sometimes there's more people in power, but New York, this is the way it is. And a lot of states, this is the way it is. And ultimately, they're all controlled, maybe controlled by more than this. But New York State is controlled by five people. Every person going on that ballot is decided on by five people. Every person who becomes a committee man who is not elected but appointed by who? Those five people. They control everything, the whole political process, five people. And they are controlled on a national level to some degree ultimately. But all of this, all of these crooks that get onto the ticket is either the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left, so they put it together because there really is no right and left. There is, lawlessness or tyranny on the other side. That's it. We're in the middle. We're a little off to the tyranny side, not the lawlessness side, more closer to that. But we're under a law, okay? We're people of law, not of law by government, but law by God. We're in natural law. That's our law. And that's how we run. That's how we need to be running this nation. And we need to put it all back together because it's a mess. Everything is fake. Everything is phony. It's not real. Nothing. You know, our law isn't real. Our courts isn't real. Nothing is real. Our money isn't real. Nothing is real. It's all fiction, phony, fake, all to just delude us more and give us these illusions and delusions so that they can do what they have to do to make as much money as they can before they put us into slavery. You know, think about this. Every single county, I heard that there are some counties that it's not true with, and it may even be a few towns, but they have to, you can probably count them on your hands. But every county, every town, every village, every state, even the United States, is all been incorporated into a municipality. And with a municipality, that's city control. That's the law by the city law. That's what we're living under, civil law, city law. We're living under municipality powers and authorities. These people that are totally out of control, criminals, they're the ones in control, and they're out of control, but they're in control of us, and they govern it all. You know, so we need to do something about that. All right, hopefully I answered your question. Are you talking, Sean? I hear something. I don't know who's... we're not coming through, Sean. Try it again. All right, I'm not hearing Sean anymore. Go ahead, try it. All right, I'm not getting you. I got to move to the next caller because we're running out of time, but we're not getting anything if you're saying anything. So we'll go to the next caller, Barbara from New York. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Barbara.
Hi, thank you. This is Barbara from New York. I'm calling because I live in this town, Larchmont, which is in the Mamaroneck in New York, and we've had several
You also don't have a sheriff there, do you?
Oh, is that true? I don't even know.
Oh, yeah, there's no sheriff. You're in Westchester County, right? You're in Westchester County? Yeah, no sheriff in Westchester County.
We I don't know. It was several years ago. We had a very large apartment building, and nobody wanted it. This was during the Obama era, and it's completely disorganized our schools. I've gone to, although my kids are now, like, I have one in college and the others are older, but I went to one of the board meetings just to see exactly what it did to the school system. And, they're in disarray. They don't know how to handle it. Nobody wanted it, but it was forced on us. We were told that, you know, you have to do this. And I know that the rural districts people have been pushed out of the rural districts. It's been made very hard to stay there. I know about the flood analyses that have been done and then all over the country, and then how after they do this flood study, they say, oh, well, this area could really be flooded, and they raise the insurance, and then people can't afford to stay in the rural districts. So people have, they got to go somewhere. So they're pushing us more and more and more into these already populated areas. So, you know, we have these things forced on us. There's one right now.
Yeah, Agenda 21 is playing a big role in that, too.
Oh, yes, very big role. So we have a big one now. The community's so unhappy about it. And I read, you know, I heard in the talk about the Red Pill meeting, that Rosa Quar was her behind the green mask, UN Agenda 21, was she was speaking. And I read her book, and I was very impressed by it. And she was saying that this group, the ICLEI, the International Council on Local Environmental Initiatives, which is a United Nations NGO, was very special to David. All over our country.
Yeah, this is all foreign interference in that, but go right ahead.
Yeah, and she says near the end of the book, she said, it's against our laws in this country to have an international agent interfere with our local government. It's illegal.
Absolutely.
There was a house that went way back, and it was... the town wanted to keep it because there was a local architect and it had some kind of 1930s flavor to it, and people thought it was attractive. And we went through this meeting, which was, you know about the Delphi technique in the meetings where they can completely control the meetings and people are told to shut up and everything, and they use emotion and they,
right.
And they give you almost no time to talk.
They're very well organized to be able to do that, to shut down the people, and they continue their agenda. But,
sure.
They use that. That's a socialist, thing.
Communitarianism.
Exactly. So,
yeah,
but look at all of that. All of that is irrelevant. It's going to disappear very quickly, because look at, we're aware of the Agenda 21 problem. We're aware of taxes, look at all these taxes that they put upon the people are illegal, okay, unlawful. The fact that you have to pay tax on your home, all right, that's not lawful at all. I mean, look at, you don't own the property,
yeah,
you're renting it then. They're the king and they own it, and then we're serfs and we're renting the property. No, we got to get rid of all that. But the first order of business here, that National Liberty Alliance's plan, we have a plan to fix a lot of these problems. And a lot of the problems will be fixed on their own because they're unlawful. As soon as you discover they're unlawful, we can shut them down immediately. Okay? And, we have to educate and empower the people in the grassroots level so that they can take control of their local government. Okay? And to deal with your problems in your county, in your town, or in your different election districts, like for the assembly or for the Senate, for the state. And the Senate district should be the county, and the assembly district should be broken into counties also, not going into different counties, because that's called gerrymandering, and that's something we also have to fix. We have a lot of problems to fix, and we can fix them very quickly. The thing is we have to have the people involved. The people have to take the positions that we're trying to reveal and uncover that's been concealed, and giving them the power and the authority and the knowledge to be able to take these positions and then exercise that authority on the grassroots level and take care of their business at home. But, look, Agenda 21 is out the door as soon as we, the people, become empowered. We're connecting the committee men with the administrators so that they work together, okay? Because we're the people. We can work together. And we want to get the message out right into every election district. Every election district has between 200, maybe even less than that in some places, maybe 100, but roughly, let's say, between 100 and 400. I think 400 or around 400 is the maximum families permitted in an election district before they break away into another election district. And so, every election district has two committeemen, one for the Republican Party, one for the Democrat Party. And once we get on the same page, and we'll do it without them, but they'll eventually come along and tap in because they'll lose everything if they don't. But once we control the people, control on the grassroots level, let me give you an example. My county has 49. We have 49 committeemen, okay, in my county, all right?
Uh-huh.
And then there's 49 on the Democratic Party also, 49 committeemen. And of those committeemen, we have a connection to every election district. So we can start an educational campaign with flyers, okay? When we do the petitioning for the papers, walk in the walk in our election districts for the papers, for signatures. We can be giving out information to the people where they can get educated, and we can start educating people even through mailings and stuff and getting them involved. Meanwhile, we need to get back into the schools. We can take back the controls of the schools and give it back to the people in the district, the families that need to get into the school and get making decisions for the school. Not that the school makes decisions for us. And what's important to us as a people in wherever we live that's in education that we want to do in our schools, you know? And when one place does better, you know, one town does better with their schools than another place, and the other one looking, they'll try to become better, maybe change the, you know, we work these things out together as time goes on, and it can happen very quickly. But the key thing is teaching our children, teaching them the right way, teaching them that they also have a duty as one of the people to maintain control of their nation, to have government by consent, to protect our courts, to protect our people, protect ourselves, okay, by taking these positions. And so everybody has a duty to become a committee man at least once in their lifetime. Everybody has that duty. Everybody has the duty to respond to the call when you're called to sit on a jury, grand jury or trial or a petit jury. And look at, if you can't go because maybe you're a business owner and maybe you're real business busy during the summer, like I was a contractor, a lot of my business was mostly in the summer, but I wasn't as busy in the winter. So if they were to call me in the middle of summer to get on to be on a to sit on a grand jury or a trial jury, you know, I would say to them, well, look at my busy time. Call me in January and February, and I'll come do it. And they should be able to adapt that process and get your name in during that time. But everybody needs to respond. This is government by consent. This is what we must do if we want to be a free people. If a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. Forget about it. You can't have it. So we must do this. So we're gonna fix those problems. We're gonna fix the family court problems. We already have an idea. We'll write a paper on it. People can build upon it, but we need to get out there and change the process. You can't have lawyers deciding on what family is gonna do and what's right for a family, what's gonna fix a family. You can't have lawyers trying to win their side where one parent gets 90% of the time. No, our children deserve mom and dad, period, end of subject, nothing to talk about, you know?
Yeah.
They deserve them both. It's their right to have a parent. Oops, I'm sorry. I hit you. Come back into the queue. Hit star six. I accidentally hit the button and you got thrown off, I think. All right, that woman up there, you came back. I think that's it, Kelly. Okay, let me get Kelly again. Go ahead, Kelly. Sorry. Was that you, Kelly, that I was talking to? Maybe it wasn't. But anyway, Kelly, you got the mic. Kelly in Missouri, you got the mic. Yeah, we lost, that was Barbara we had on from New York. Yeah, we lost Barbara. But I see her back in the queue. I'll try to get her back in next. Kelly in Missouri, you got the mic. Kelly's not responding, so we'll go to Barbara, back to Barbara. And we got a couple more people in the queue. We will get to everyone tonight, though. I was running late, so we'll run a little over time. Barbara, go right ahead. I think it was you I was talking with. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Yep.
On the short term, there's going to be a meeting this week about this current building. And from what I've learned, the reason these buildings go through regardless is that this ICLEI, it takes like two or three people out of your local community, and it pays them huge sums, and they make the decisions, and it's over. Now, can I say something like that, or is that just gonna? Are they just gonna, you know, destroy me? Or I don't know what
to do. Well, look, I can't advise you on what to do now. And you'll have to figure that out and see how much you want to talk or not talk or get involved or fight or whatever. Maybe you'll find a lot of people that agree with you and they want to change the system. I don't know. But whatever you think you got to do. But I can tell you this. If there is an injustice, if there is something controlling the people and people don't have the opportunity to participate and control their own, whatever affects their own life, then it has to be fixed.
Yeah.
Okay? And that is something...
Out.
That is something that if it is a national problem, okay, if it's happening everywhere, like Agenda 21, if that's what's happening, like Agenda 21, we will be focused in on that as a national problem. Once we get the people situated in the courts and we take them back to courts, we have the administrators administrating the business of the juries. Okay. Well, at that point in time, and we're starting to build the committee men, which would be very helpful to this too. But just in the courts themselves, we can deal with this problem, and we can, you know, get a lot more information, make a plan, and share that plan. And people on the county levels who are dealing with the problem within a county with Agenda 21 or any other problem can exercise our plan. They can add to it and change it a little as they feel, because you're free to, you know, we're self-ruling. One county may do it different than another county. As long as we're just, you see, that's the key thing. That's why we have this vow, and it's to God. It's not to government. It's not to the people. It's to God. That we are going to operate with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And as long as we're operating under those three ideas, okay, those frame of minds, okay, we'll be doing the right thing, and we'll be making the right decisions, and we'll, you know, bring justice back and fix the problem. So we'll figure a way to fix the problem. Again, the family court's a simple one. I've already formulated an idea. I haven't put it to paper yet, but I will. And once I put it to paper, share it with the people. This is what we'll suggest, a way to do it. Some people may improve on it, make little changes, but that's their business. But we're all going to be focusing to fix the problem, and that's the key.
Okay.
So with that, I got to move to the next caller. Okay. You only got another second or two because it's getting late.
Thank you,
Barbara. Appreciate it. Okay, let's take Nathan. Don't know what state you're from, Nathan, but go right ahead, Nathan. Green Gus? Nathan, you got the mic. Nathan, one more time for Nathan. Okay, I guess Nathan fell asleep or walked away. We'll go to the next caller. Okay, let's go to Kelly in Missouri. You got the mic, Kelly. Kelly in Missouri. Okay, not hearing anything from Kelly. Okay, no one there with Kelly, so we'll go to the next caller. Sean from Arizona. You got the mic again, Sean.
Hey, I'm back. Yeah, I got dropped. I guess we're having some...
It happens sometimes. I did hit I moved my mouse and it hit the button, and I did dump one person, which got back on. I think that was Barbara, but I might have done that to you too. I don't know. Sorry if I did, but go ahead, Sean.
My judgment was entered a couple of weeks ago, and I'm trying to make a plan. I know you guys have done the amicus curiae, and that's been sent in, and we're waiting for that time frame to come up. But I'm in the interim. I'm just you being in my shoes. Would you be worried about or doing anything with the appeal, or just letting that window close? Does that
matter? What kind of case is it?
It's a civil case. It's district court.
Is it a mortgage case or something? Or
No. It's securities.
Traffic or securities? Okay.
Securities. And so it's a monetary judgment.
To protect yourself, it gives you more time. I would, as you continue to work, we continue to work with you. You work with us to work your case in where we're working it. In order to keep them off your back and to get more time, file a paper with an intent to appeal. Go look to see what the rules are. Just follow their rules. I'll tell you, in New York, for instance, when you have 30 days from the judgment to file an appeal, okay? And so you file your appeal within that 30 days, wait the 25 days, 20 days, let some time go by, it's just more 20 more days for you. And then you file an intent. Again, look at the rules to find out if this is the process. And, you know, it is here in New York. We file our intent. It's intent to appeal. And once you file your intent to appeal, it gets filed with the appellate court. And this is, I'm talking New York State now, gets filed with the appellate court, obviously gets filed in the court that you're in. And once you and everybody is notified, you then have 9 months to perfect that paper. Okay, so if you're really biting on time, you wait the 9 months. You go 8 months and 25 days before you serve the papers. You just don't miss that the time period, you know. But, you know, so in New York, you can get, you know, a month after the decision, you know, 25 days, and you can get another 9 months, and then you file the papers, and then you serve it on everyone. It's still going to take time. It's going to take another 4 to 6 months, maybe even more. So you can buy yourself a year of just keeping the case kind of in limbo. So I would take every opportunity to do that. Now, there is something else you could do first, and again, you need to go check on the rules, but I believe this is everywhere. I've done it in New York State, and I've done it on a federal court, where you can file a paper for a reconsideration of the decision, okay? And a reconsideration of the decision, you have two choices to go. You can either ask the judge that made the decision in that case to reconsider his position, and you have to do that within 30 days, and then, you know, then he'll get back to you or she'll get back to you at a certain point in time. Or you can request a panel of judges for the reconsideration of the decision. Of course, that's the way you're going to go. Obviously, the judge made the decision. Then the chances of them changing their mind is pretty slim, especially if your case was strong and they went the wrong way. What more can you say to them to make them go the right way? They're maintaining the status quo, so they're going to continue to go the wrong way. So again, you can go to that process. That can take a period of time until you work through that after that reconsideration. Once the reconsideration, once that panel of judges makes a decision, then they'll file it and they'll send you a serve you a paper on what the decision was and everyone else involved. And if it goes negative, you then have 30 days again now to file for the appeal. So doing it that way, you can probably pick up another 2, 3, or more months. Then you get your 30 days, another couple of months, and another 30 days, and then 9 months, and then another 3, 4 months. You can be dragging this in for a couple of years to keep your case in limbo that way. So I would do that if I were you.
I appreciate that. So you think though, and continuing with the appeal and possibly the panel of judges side versus like a writ of error or void judgment and going.
Yeah, they're not going to listen to a writ of error. I've done it numerous times. They just totally ignore it. They don't care. So they're not going to listen to that. But remember, the panel of judges is you don't even pay for that. You know, I know when I've done it in federal and in state, I didn't have to pay a fee or anything to move for a reconsideration of the decision. So you say if it's a federal case, you're saving what? $500, $600 or five. I think it's $500 to file an appeal in a federal court. They charge you $400 to get in there, then $500 to file for the appeal. So you're saving that money, and you might be able to get a good decision that way. But it's also buying you more time. And remember, whenever you pay this, put on a check you're paying under protest, okay, or in the money order, whatever you do. You're paying under protest because we don't pay for justice. But we might pay for equity, but I don't belong in an equity court. I don't have a problem in equity court for them requiring corporations to pay a fee of $300. Here in New York, it's $300, $310 between the what's called the index number and the actual filing fee. And so it's $210 plus $100, $310, but that's for a corporation. And I think, yeah, let them. They should be paying money to get into the court. But for the people, no, it's an unalienable right. Justice is not to be charged for. And they're charging money for justice. Of course, you're never going to get justice anyway. They're charging their money for their injustice is what they're really doing.
Do we have any members that are good writers that assist on these types of things as far as the writing of the papers?
Well, I can't really, you know, send you to anyone particularly, a lot of people don't do the research that I do. I'm driven by this kind of thing. Whatever I do, I get driven, you know. And so I'm researching, and a lot of people don't have the time to research as I do. They can learn off of what I've done by listening to these programs. They can learn from taking our courses, reading the book, and participating, and we can grow together and so on and so forth. I don't know. Again, you know, you're in a... There's a certain mindset I've developed in the courts, and, you know, it's hard to teach those mindsets. But people should pick them up. You learn this and you learn that and you learn another thing and you get a little experience here and a little experience there. And all of a sudden you have an epiphany. Okay, wow, this is how it should go and this is how I should do it. Well, that's a certain mindset you're going to maintain and you're going to operate under that mindset, because every time you have an epiphany, it's part of a process you want to use all the time. And that's what people need to really develop. And that only happens if you're really focused and digging and learning and growing all the time in a particular area, in this case, the law and freedom and liberty and so on. What I can tell you is we have, if you feel confident, you can go up to our page. I don't know if you've been there yet, but if you highlight education on our blue line tab, okay, come all the way down to the bottom, you'll see court forms, process, and instructions. Okay, and there's a lot of information on different processes and forms and stuff. We have instructions and forms to challenge jurisdiction, and we give everything in PDFs and Word, so you have it in both ways. Word is more manipulable because you cut and paste. It brings over your footnotes, and you can alter it and change things and, you know, make your case the way you need to make it. We have instructions and forms to move your case into federal court for cause. Okay? We have instructions and forms on filing a habeas corpus on your own. We have instructions and forms to move the court for enforcement. We have information, a good layout for a notice and demand if you're working outside the courts. And we have a lot of downloads on that page also. You can download Black's Law 2nd Edition and Black's Law 4th Edition. Now, both of those just came out of copyright law, and that was about maybe a year ago or so. So we used to have them up, and they made us take it down. But now that they're past the copyright term, we can give them away for free. So you can download Black's Law 2nd Edition and Black's Law 4th Edition. Now, Black's Law 4th Edition, I believe, was, when was that? I think in 1965 or something like that, if I recall. Let me open it up real quick just to take a look on the 4th. The 4th Edition, 1968, okay? Now, it's pretty good. There may be a few questionable things in there, but the advantage of having a later one, it gives you a lot of the latter United States Supreme Court rulings that you might not find in the 2nd edition. Now, the 2nd edition, that was, the copyright was done in 1910 on that one. Originally in 1891, and then it was the 2nd edition was updated in 1910. Okay, and if you go through using both of those, you'll find if there are any problems. But I found them working very well together, and just more information as far as latter United States Supreme Court decisions, you know, after 1910 is in the other one. And so you can use those. Also, let me see if I have... I broke a year's law up there, too, okay? And I use that also... Okay, we'll continue. It should connect. No, we don't. We've gone 4 or 5 hours and hadn't done that. Somebody's fingers were out there. you go to Beauvilliers, okay, and it's the 1856 edition. And that's good. It's not as in-depth as Black's, but it's a lot of good stuff, and sometimes I get, you know, better information from that. So I use all three, mostly the latter Blacks and then the Boviers, but sometimes I go into the second edition. I use that one too. So that's available for people to download that on that page. You can download all three of those dictionaries. We have Sir Edward Coke's writings. We have Maxims of Law from Boviers also. We have a court procedure book that we wrote, it's a little old, and we've updated some things, but it gives you a good basic idea on how to write papers and do different things. And we have, I put my footnotes up there. Eventually I got to re-update them because I am always adding to my footnotes. Footnotes, I every time I write a footnote on my paper, I usually save that footnote. I give it a title. I save that footnote in Notepad. Sometimes I use Word, but usually Notepad. And I have lots and lots and lots of footnotes. So when I write a paper, I can quickly pull up a footnote and find out the quote that I want and maybe the source of information or whatever it is I'm talking about. So you can have all those there. That's all available up there. We have a lot of memorandums up there, which a lot of these memorandums you can find on our court cases that we filed on the grand jury underneath grand jury. You click on action against the judiciary. And on that, we have hundreds of papers that we filed. And, it's great. You want to learn the law. You want to go into court. You should be reading those papers because it's just a mountain of just great stuff that will empower you and uplift you. And whenever I had a problem with the IRS and they came up after me, you get that dreaded letter and you look at it and you know it's nothing but garbage and they're going to give you a hard time and you finally get around to opening it and dealing with it. Every time I finally get around opening it and dealing with it and writing a paper on it, all of a sudden I feel powerful and strong because I deal with everything they have in there. So that's how you have to go and think. So all of these cases that we've written in the past and the papers we filed in the past 3 years is all under grand jury and click action against the judiciary. And read those papers. And you'll find yourself cutting and pasting pieces out and putting them in, organizing in some way that you can get access to easily and, some logical fashion like I do with my footnotes. You can cut and paste and use this on court cases. But, just reading them is an education, okay, because we cover everything in here. Now, the memorandums, you'll find a bunch of memorandums on the page we're talking about under education. We have a memorandum on natural rights versus civil rights. We have a memorandum concerning Title 18, particularly dealing with the penal code applied against the people. We have a memorandum on tax courts dealing with USC 26, okay? A memorandum on what statutes, codes, and regulations are really for. We have a lot of memorandums here, and each one of them have a subject matter of information that you need to know. We have a memorandum on the grand jury authority. People should understand the power and the authority of the grand jury. Founding Fathers concerned about the judiciary. That was a good one. And I've used that. We use it in the court case, and you might use it in yours. So there's, a mountain of stuff here. Anybody that's going to go into court, you got to get educated. And I hate to advise people of things in the court when they, I know that they really don't know what the next step is after that. Nor do they maybe realize that what's said in the courtroom had changed the whole process or position you had, maybe, number one. You have to realize whether that took place or not. You also have to realize that, when the judge responds, you have to be able to respond back and take control of that court case, if you're not controlling the conversation in the court, you're losing, if you're on the offense, you're winning. But if you're on the defense, you're losing, and you need to understand that. And you need to recollect yourself and find out why, you're not controlling the narrative. You must control the narrative in the court. Also, you have to put the judge on notice in very subtly, I might now, because I've made most recent knowledge of Rule 2 and how they really did what they did, and I've been hammering down on that in a lot of our papers. I go into court, especially a federal court, and I'm going to send a few messages to that judge as I speak concerning Rule 2 without giving out too much information, knowing that the judge understands what I'm talking about, but the lawyers in that courtroom probably don't have a clue. okay? And that's okay, because that's what you want to do. When the judge sees you acting like that, that you're kind of really trying to help him out too, to not get himself stuck in a place he shouldn't be, I think that's how I won my court case in the IRS some years back. And, I mean, that was part of the process. But, you know, alerting the judge, and you know, and when the judge starts scratching his head over you because he sees you're doing certain things, you're communicating in a certain way, you're making certain points that most people don't know, you're holding positions that are true and just, and you're giving him opportunity to change the way without alerting the whole courtroom that he's breaking the law and all that other stuff, because you do it in subtle ways, and then the judge starts thinking, he doesn't know how much more you know. He knows you're a problem to him. That's what he or she knows. You're a problem to that judge, and they know it. And so you may be a new thing to that person and that judge, in the sense that, you know, he's going to try to get this court case out of his court. And if you're being brought into the court, that's exactly what you do want. You want this case thrown out, or you want to win. You're not going to win, so you just get thrown out. And so anyway, you know, all these things, if I advise people or send someone to something to write a paper, you need to know what to do next. So if you feel that you can control this thing and you can do papers and you want to utilize some of these forms and ideas and memorandums and positions and so on, go for it. You know, I don't want to hold anyone back either.
Yeah, well, I'm about, I've completed the government by consent course. I've finished the civics and on to the constitutional. So, but
well, the government by consent course is only about halfway done. There's more to that course. It just hasn't been posted up yet. And after this week, I'm hoping to get back to it. I do have most of it written, okay, and most of it, you know, I'm really working right now on the Constitution itself, on each article, each point, and so on. And once I get that through, the next step after that, really most of that work is already done. It's just a matter of me going through it, updating it, and maybe rewording some of the things, sewing things together a little better, and then posting it. I know that if I can get 2 weeks, let's say, or a week, where I don't have anything to do but to work on that course, I can get it done, let's say, in a week. But the problem is that I constantly have other things coming up, constantly writing papers, doing other things, and just takes away. So I am really struggling trying to get back to finish that course up, and I do intend on doing that soon.
Well, I've taken enough of your time. Keep doing God's work, and thanks again.
Okay, appreciate the call. Thanks a lot, Sean. Good night. Okay, let me see where we're at. Do we have anyone else? We have one other caller, so we'll take the last caller. We're running late, but I started late, so let me take it. Suzanne from North Carolina, you got the mic.
Hi, this is Suzanne. I wanted clarification on, you were saying, I'm wondering, do you have little groups going on or networks going on in each of the areas? Like you said, you're up in Longmont. Is there a group of people?
Well, you know, we try to encourage that. You know, we used to have some groups that were more active, and some groups are still out there active. We don't get involved too much of whatever it is that they're doing. You know, we teach them what we can, and they're on their own on a grassroots level, trying to figure things out, grow, and do what they got to do. Every once in a while, we may get we haven't had a report in a while, but this has happened 3 times to us. Where someone was in a group and said things are out of control, so we went, got involved in it, and we tried to fix the problem because we saw that they were, you know, using our name and using the people in our groups, and meanwhile they're poisoning the people with things that they shouldn't be doing, things that will get them in trouble. If you were listening earlier, I mentioned about
a group
in Colorado, okay, almost all those people, I think it was 8 of them. They went to jail. We had to cut them off.
Okay,
they went to jail after we cut them off because we could not permit that poison to enter into our group. But let me say one thing.
Right.
There are things coming up the pike. Well, let me just say one thing about what your question is.
Okay.
There's things coming up the pike, depending on how it goes. might stimulate things in such a way that the groups will become very, very active, and what you'll be looking for, you'll be able to find in your county quite quickly. Meanwhile, right now, as it goes, you'd have to call around and see who's actively working and involving, if they're having meetings and what they're doing, and get involved. And then we trust in our people that if a problem arises that is poisoned, teaching contrary to what we're teaching here, we will intervene, communicate. I mean, we'll consider ourselves an error too. Maybe, you know, maybe they got something that we missed. I mean, we have corrected ourselves from time to time. I do it all the time in paperwork, but we don't want people coming in doing things that's going to get people in trouble, you know.
My question was more, or one part of the question is, you mentioned 30,000 people right now. You have 6,000 members.
We've got 8,000, yeah.
Or 8,000. And so I guess when you have 30,000, are you still going to have to wait for the deep state or whatever to go down?
Oh, no.
Critical mass?
When we hit the 30,000, we'll be at critical mass. There are things coming down the pike, we think. Again, I'm not going to get into details, that may push us to that position very quickly. And if that does happen, then it is a matter of the deep state going down at the same time. That's happening right now. Look at on Friday, they're going to be releasing a lot of the papers and all of the crimes, and I hear it's as thick as a phone book. Well, phone books are pretty thin these days, but when they used to be thick.
Right.
And
So
once that comes out, right behind that, I got to believe Barr's going to be following up with indictments and people are going to be arrested. And when it gets to the big wigs, when someone like Hillary Clinton is finally arrested and brought to justice, and someone like Barack Obama and Biden and all these people, when all these people start going to court, the deep state is going down. And if we're in the right position at that time and we hit the critical mass, we're going to get in. And remember, look at what we have to say to these people and what we record and put on their files, okay, is frightening to them, but they're too stupid to get frightened now because they're kicking back. They haven't got the memo yet that the deep state is going down. They still think they're self-deceived to think that they're still going on. That's why they're still maintaining status quo. And a lot of them maintaining status quo may continue because of fear, and they don't know whether it's going to go down or not. But once they go down, the ones that are doing it on fear, they're going to flip and probably do the right thing. And we understand that. You know, they had a between a rock and a hard place. We're not going to chase them down.
So my question is, would it be helpful to do like some sort of a networking where everybody who's a member tries to, or like reaches out to three people?
Absolutely.
Person.
Look at, we post the state coordinators. We post a lot of information on people who don't mind their names and numbers out there. We have county organizers that all posted their numbers and information. And you can go through our listings and call some people up that is in your area, in your county. We encourage that, and we don't want to. We don't want to control those conversations. You people need to do whatever it is you do on your level, but when we're dealing with the law and the courts and filings and things of that nature, right now the only one doing that is the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. None of the state grand juries are doing that yet because they're not educated enough to do it. You know, we have to be trained and taught. And then once you're able to stand up on your own and you got it, then you go do it. But anyway, organizing, communicating, planning, trying to figure out problems in your area, growing together, sharing the things that we're sharing here, building each other up, all that we encourage. But we also, you know, from time to time, if we get an alert from someone that says, hey, these people are really going astray, we don't want to see anyone go to jail, so we'll go fix them, you know?
Right. My other question is, last Monday somebody spoke about Phil Hudock, and I was wondering if you had a chance to go look at his information.
Yeah, we did. I did look at it. Some other people looked at it. It's nothing, well, there's so much. I'd have to have a really serious conversation with the individuals involved and find more, but I don't see anything really big moving on that. I definitely don't want to interest our membership to go over and get involved there when first they need to be more involved here. We don't mind supporting different things on other people they do. For instance, we will have on our page, for instance, Liberty Beacon, okay? We suggest people to go there because you get a lot of information. I mean, whatever involvement you want to get over there, that's fine. But you go there to get information because that's what they do. They get a lot of information out. You know, Judicial Watch, we have a, you know, an icon on them. We would like people to go visit them and see what they're doing because they're doing a good work. Mm-hmm. And there's other things that we support in a sense. I don't see it would be mutually exclusive. Yeah, I don't see getting involved with that at this point unless someone, and I'm open to more conversation on it. I'd be more liking to talk with the people that are involved with doing what they're doing and working from that level, because if we are compatible, then we can connect, because after all, we are National Liberty Alliance, and it should then become a two-way street. And it's something that we can even give a platform off of our website for those people if we are compatible in their thinking.
Right. Well, I just perused it. That was my first introduction last Monday as well, but I've been looking at information there and it seems pretty congruent to me. So, anyway, and the arbitration, the joining of the arbitration, the joiner or whatever, I think.
Well, the joiners is it actually joining your case over and we're using that. Number one, you're in jurisdictions unknown, and that's what the amicus curiae talks about. They need to cease and desist because they're not giving you due process and they're violating your unalienable right of due process, your Fifth Amendment, and you're also, you're in a jurisdiction you have no clue, and so that's the argument of the amicus curiae. And when they deny answering that or responding to that or try to throw that out of the court, well, 30 days later, they're going to find that we're going to move that case into federal court. They're going to complain and do all kinds of things. We don't care what they think, do or say. It's irrelevant. We're just going to, the law is going to move on. We're going to be like a steamroller, a train unstoppable, and we're going to continue to go forward. We're going to make decisions. We're going to file those decisions. If it's appropriate, we're going to do indictments. And we're going to move on, and at the end of the day, we expect all that we're doing to be enforced at some point in time. But that's not going to really happen until we get to, you know, the critical mass and we enter into the court. Now, on the course of moving forward with the amicus curiae, then moving into the federal court for cause, maybe it may wake up the judge. And the lawyers in that case, I doubt the lawyers, but at least it might wake up the judge. The judge might decide, okay, I'm going to do the right thing here. And that's it. It's done. People save their house or whatever it is that, we did the paperwork for. And there's no reason to, then at that point, if they won at that level, there's no reason to join them. Because the judge did the right thing.
I wanted to say that, remember, yes, last week when somebody came on and spoke about the HUDOC that you had to add into their court case or whatever it was.
Say that again.
For Phil HUDOC, he said you had to join in by November 1st. I wanted to tell you that date has been moved to December 25th because they had such an overwhelming response.
That's good.
So anyway, there's more time for everybody to kind of familiarize themselves.
Again, from my position, connecting and sending people over there, I would need to have communications with the people involved.
Right.
You know, these people.
Let's see if I can find Phil's phone number.
Well, the people we have on the right-hand side of our website that we support, either they're reporting the truth, and it's just so good we have to share it. We may not have had conversation with them. And with the exception of Judicial Watch, because we haven't, although we've been copying Judicial Watch what we're doing, nevertheless, we have not had direct communications with those people, but we do support them because they're doing something different than we're doing, and it's good. All the rest of these other, anybody else we have in here, we've had communications with. Liberty Beacon, we're both on the right track, and that's why we support sending people there to see what they got to offer.
Okay, well, I'll peruse your website a little bit more and familiarize myself.
Okay. Appreciate the call.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to take one of the callers in there. We got to make it quick, though, because it's 12:30. Last caller, Andrea, is that correct? Am I saying that right? Andre or Andrea?
It's Andrea, and I'm in
Andrea, New York. Yes, well, 518, I see.
Yeah. Is there a court of record in New York yet, in upstate New York?
Only one. Ours. That's it.
And where is that?
Well, that's the case. We sued the United States Supreme Court and both houses of Congress.
Oh, because I see papers on the Northern District of New York and Albany.
Right. We have two cases up there. One is against the, as I mentioned, the United States Supreme Court, the federal judiciary, and both houses of Congress. And the other one we have is a case against Governor Cuomo and both houses concerning the gun laws. They're trying to destroy one of our unalienable rights of defending ourselves from them.
Yeah, I started to read those. Okay. And
that case is going to, they've shut that down. They can think and do whatever they want. It's irrelevant. We are moving that case over into the other federal case. So I just haven't gotten around to doing that yet, but it's something we're going to be doing in the very near future. And we're going to pick that gun case back up and push it to the hilt.
Oh, good. Now, common law. When do you think the common law will come back to our courts?
As soon as we get access into the federal court, it'll acclimate around the country. I would think in 3 months we'd be in every court. I think so. I think it'll happen that quick. Look, at the first order of business is getting the United States Supreme Court to do the right thing because they haven't done it. Okay, they just have not done it. We have made it clear. They know that they're in violation. They know that they're on the side of tyranny, that they're just 1 inch away from indictments. We're just giving them some grace and some time, you know, to fix their problems and deal with things. And, you know, but I'll tell you what. When the deep state goes down and it's obvious that they're in a tailspin and that's it, it's just a matter of time to finish off justice in the courts. Once that's happening, the United States Supreme Court has run out of time, and it's time. And we will indict. We will indict. We'll the people's going to have to decide that. It's not my decision. We will bring it up to the people to consider an indictment on these justices. Maybe all of them, maybe some of them, but we'll have to think about it. But right now, they have been silent. Silence when they have a duty to speak is fraud. They have been silent for 20 years. 20 years we've been banging on the doors of the United States Supreme Court. We started this in 1999, 2000. That's when we started. That's when I got involved with We the People. And that's when we started moving through the system in Washington, banging on their doors, and we've come to the conclusion that courts of law are no longer available. That happened, I think, in 2002. And we continued to bang on their doors, and we asked the United States Supreme Court, do we still have a constitution? Do we still have a right of redress? And their response was crickets, okay? They're guilty of sin.
Okay. Now, the justices, like the judges in upstate New York, like county judges, are they going to go away, too? Are they going to be arrested? Or?
Well, again, let's not say arrested. Look, they're going to meet justice. Whatever justice is, that's what the, first of all, the grand jury has to decide to indict them. Second of all, a trial jury has to decide to convict them. And then at that point, you know, whatever the jury decides is necessary to be done, and that's what they decide. But we will file and indict anyone we have to, or at least we'll bring it up for indictment. We have already agreed as a grand jury that anybody who sticks their fingers into our case, or sticks their toes into the door, or whatever the case may be, we're going to cut them off. We're going to indict them. We agreed on that already, automatic. And we've got a lot of indictments. We've got over 100 of them. and of judges, federal judges and county judges and state court judges and just different judges all over the place. I think it's got to be close to 100, if not 100. And so, we're going to go forward and justice will be met. But I will tell you that the moment that the deep state goes into tailspin and critical mass is met, everything is positioned, we will get into the federal court and we will take control of the federal court in courts of law like it should be. This is what's the right. This is our right. This is our heritage to have natural law courts and to protect those natural law courts. So once that happens, then we can move throughout the whole United States very quickly to take back the state courts. And the state courts also operate the county courts, okay? So that's part of the state courts. The town courts, the village courts, the most city courts, because New York City courts, for instance, are accepted as a state court to a sense. They deal with a lot of crime and a lot of things, so they have a court of record status in New York City courts. And there may be other cities that are like that, too. If not, okay. It'll go right back to the county courts, you know, the state courts that's controlled in the counties. But your village courts, most of your city courts and your town courts will fall apart for lack of income because they won't be able to prosecute people anymore and take all the money from people in traffic court, all that, because that's how they make their money.
Yeah, I know. I understand the bench and that it represents the money and, you know, the judges get pensions and for every conviction, I understand the whole horrible business. I'm trying to do a challenge of jurisdiction for my son who is in jail in Saratoga County Jail, and he was put in jail because he supposedly did this burglary second, and he was he just came out of the hospital and he was all drugged up from a head injury. They let him go too early and he doesn't remember the crime. He shouldn't even have been arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fighting this. The hospital's at fault for letting him go. They gave him 10 milligrams of Versed. The normal person, a normal dosage is 2 milligrams. My son is only 195 pounds. He's still out of his mind in the jail. He's got 7 COs in the jail that will write statements for him that he is he's out of character. But this ADA is still
okay, well, let me tell you, if you can get those people to write something for you, that would be an advantage. And if you do an affidavit on behalf of your son as what's called a next friend, okay, we can help you with that. And you put that information together and you get it out to Jim, you fill out the paperwork to file for a habeas corpus. Now, we're just trying to move back into habeas corpus. And I don't know how fast we're going to do this. I have one case I do want to get done right away, and so I'm hoping to work on it. I'm planning on working on it this week to get that case done. Once I get that paperwork completed, because it needs to be updated. It's been a while since we did habeas corpus, and we have more knowledge and want to add some things and, you know, lay things out in a different way. But once that's done this week, and I can train, people to go through that paperwork because it's pretty much generic. It's always the same thing. And we could do a habeas corpus for you.
I got your forms from Gary, and I filled them out already for my son.
Mm-hmm. Did you talk about Gary Will?
Yeah.
Okay, because Gary Will is talking to me about a case that I want to work for him on, and I don't know, maybe that's you, but you're not going to get anywhere by filing these papers on your own unless you really understand the process, the games.
Oh no,
play.
I'm not going to file them. Oh, no, I was just trying to make it easier for everybody else so that, you know, I wouldn't have to, you know, I'll do it, whatever I have to do. Send them to you or send them to him? I don't know.
Well, look at what you do is this. If you're the case with Gary, I told Gary, I spoke with him, I don't remember, over the weekend, I guess, and I told him that I was going to try to get to updating the paperwork for the habeas corpus this week. And then once I get it updated, I'd be talking with Jim and training Jim on the process for the habeas corpus. And then the paperwork can flow. So I'm kind of hoping in maybe 2 weeks, hopefully we can have it moving through the court. And once we file it in the court, it should be only a 3 to 7 day process. It's going to take a little longer than that, but that's pretty much what it should be. And and we could see what happens. And especially if you can get papers from, what do you call them, COs, I guess?
Well, yeah, well, my son does have an attorney, and he is a trial lawyer.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to put his name in on this.
No. You leave him alone out of this because if he was connected.
He is trying to help my son. He is. But
yeah, well, if they connect him to us, what we're doing, they'll chase his bar license. So he's going to have to be in denial, and that's fine. He could be in denial. But we'll serve the habeas corpus on his behalf through you as an ex-friend and see where it goes. Where are you located? You're up in Albany?
I'm in Saratoga. Saratoga Springs. What about the challenge of jurisdiction? Isn't that the one that gets him out of jail?
Well, no, it's the habeas corpus that will get him out of jail, and the habeas corpus will be dealing with the fact that they don't have jurisdiction also.
The challenge would be in there.
And that's one of the things I don't think I had in the original habeas corpus, because when I originally wrote that, that wasn't in my thinking, my mind. But now it's become so, so big in everything. We're going to talk about, I'm going to put Rule 2 in there. We're going to put Rule 12 in there. We're going to put, the jurisdictional problem in there. And, of course, the fact that he's not getting his due process and so on.
Yeah, well, the other problem is he's suffering from the adverse effects of this drug that this hospital gave him.
Mm-hmm.
And the jail is not letting him go see a mental health person.
Mm-hmm.
He's never been, and they got him on psych drugs 24 hours a day. He's never been on psych drugs in his life.
That's all damaging and destructive to an individual, especially if they don't want it. And nobody should be forced to be putting anything in their bodies.
He's taking it because he can't sleep. He's got racing thoughts and blackouts from, he doesn't remember anything.
I don't want to get too much in any more of the details, but we will deal with the habeas corpus if you're the one that's been talking to me through Will, and. And we'll take it from there. But I'm kind of hoping to be able to do it in the next, work on it this week and maybe do it the following week, 2 weeks again. Jim is tied up and bottlenecked, and we're trying to get him help to catch up and get all this paperwork. We have a filing I wanted to do today, but I never even got together with Jim yet, being backed up on other things myself. But hopefully tomorrow we'll be able to pull a lot of cases and file them and do the actual joinders. I think he's got about 8 cases or more ready to go joinders.
Right. Well, I told Gary that once I did this for my son that I would help you guys because I have a paralegal background. And so I would be willing to help people.
Well, by the way, we are looking for one paralegal in every county across the nation. So we're looking for about 3,000 paralegals. And they don't have to live in the county they work in. But we're looking for about 3,000 of them. And they're paid positions. We're looking for a paralegal / secretary, someone to work all the paperwork for the grand jury and the trial jury and working with the administrations.
Okay, well, I can put my name in the hat if you want me to.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We're going to be putting a page together soon to really focus in on the activities, particularly with the committee men, but also for people to sign up for this particular position also as a paralegal to handle all the paperwork going through the courts. And, we will train everyone in how we're doing and what we're doing, and a paralegal background definitely is a plus. We need someone that has some experience in understanding things to some degree. So, yeah. Hopefully next week we'll announce it and you can go up and go onto the page and just click on the button to put yourself into that group category.
Okay, well, thank you so much, John, for everything you're doing. It's a great endeavor. It really is.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to end it there. Thanks a lot, Andrea.
You're welcome.
How do you pronounce your name, Andrea or Andre? Andrea or Andrea?
Whatever, Andrea.
Andrea, okay, Andrea. Thank you, Andrea. Hopefully we'll talk again soon, and we'll work on your paperwork soon also. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, with that, we've come to the end of our program. So we'll be back, Lord willing, next week, Monday. Hopefully I won't fall asleep and be late again. But anyway, we'll see you then. Thanks for everyone for coming.